You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
All right, it's September 6, 2015. I'm in the live stream now. I've got Dal from Cambridge, England. Cambridge, of course, where I live in Ontario.
Are you really? Hi. You're in Cambridge, Ontario?
Oh, we have a Cambridge, Ontario. Before they switched all the names over to Indian names, they were all British, of course, because this is a British colony of the highest order. Probably more loyal to the Queen than you guys are.
Well, you've got Cambridge, Massachusetts, haven't you, in the North America as well. There's probably a few Cambridges around the world, I guess.
Yeah, wherever the British were or are. Yeah, we have Cambridge, Ontario. It's a small town that makes Toyota manufacturing plant there. It makes all the Toyotas. They're going to keep doing it a few more years before they shut it down and move it all to Mexico. They're all setting up in Mexico now for North America because they only make $2.50 an hour.
Well, we've got the Cavendish Laboratories here in Cambridge, the famous Cavendish who came up with the gravitational constant. And we've got all sorts of high-end supposed science going on and skullduggery, I'm sure, at the university here. So establishment.
It's the Berkeley of – it is as University of California at Berkeley is America. You're maybe the social culture creationists are going on there at Cavendish.
Well, I think maybe it's too obvious, but yeah, they're the old classic, the Oxford and Cambridge are the British ones, yes. You call them Ivy League in North America, I think, don't you? For the ivy-clad walls of those old establishments with that sort of venerated...
I don't even know. That's American. I'm still more Canadian than American, so... Yeah, I know. I've heard that phrase bandied about. Well, it's good that you came over to chat with me. I'm still listening to Globebusters now. These guys are pretty good thinkers. I'm really enjoying Jaronism, Bob. These guys are really clear thinkers. Bob is a big Forum fan. Jaronism just dropped a little nugget in Globebusters 1. I just posted it, I think, on fakeologist.com. Jaron says that his brother John was on the Bin Laden ship. Or allegedly, they flew Bin Laden's body by helicopter on the ship and then just took the box and threw it over the side.
Yeah, buried at sea. In grand tradition of Islamic fundamentalist lunatics, yes. They always bear to see.
Which is not true at all, according to the Muslim people I've talked to.
No, of course. Absurd, really, wasn't it? Well, it really was silly. Yeah, we bury him and say best thing for him. You know, get...
Yeah, but Jaron said that the entire ship went on lockdown when the helicopter came on. Everyone had to go to their quarters and get locked in. I thought, wow. They kind of missed that point when they broadcast that event to the world, didn't they?
Well, it just shows you. But still, by doing it like that, some event went on, didn't it? That there's some acknowledged, even to those sailors, that they were there and something was going on. They couldn't see it.
But. Yeah, but
Yeah, you cut
sorry
out.
Sorry about that, Dal. Yeah, sorry. No, somebody phoned me. I just reset my Bluetooth. How's that sound? 2212?
Oh, yes, this new Bluetooth. Sounding good.
Oh,
yeah,
goody.
You were saying.
Okay. That blows away the excuse 3,000 witnesses or whatever the number of officers or ship sailors were on that ship witnessed the thing. Well, actually, no, they did not witness anything. They told something. They went and were locked in their rooms. Maybe or maybe not. Maybe a helicopter did land there and it did maybe have a FedEx box on it and they did throw something into the sea. But there's just no – it's all theater. It's all theater, what I wanted to That was a little nugget that Jaron dropped into his little Globebusters chat.
Oh, I think that's interesting. That says a lot, doesn't it? That's a witness, but that's a witness to nothing.
Yes.
But we know how it works. Some event happens in a foreign country. Recently, this Sousse event, it was an event in Tunisia where 30 people were supposed to have got shot on the beach. And they flew everyone back from Tunisia who were English, you know, or probably from all over Europe. They flew them back home to their countries and their holidays were curtailed. Of course, they were involved, weren't they, in this shooting? But they weren't really at all. They saw nothing, you know, and their whole lives were affected by it. Literally, they were picked up and shipped back to England, you know, repatriated even, you know, they called it in the newspapers. And they're part of the affirmation of the whole thing as it spreads through society in conversations all over, you know, in the news agents, in the pubs and everywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the other point I like that Jaron brought up was he again brought up the Dark Ages between 400 and 1400 where they said nothing happened. And I don't know who he was referencing. Said one of the people that purport that 1,000 years never existed at all was in contact with him, Jaron, and was trying to talk to him about that topic. And I think that's a pretty interesting topic as well, the Dark Ages, where allegedly nothing progressed, nothing happened. It'd be a long time for nothing to happen.
Well, we all know about dark matter, and we all know about black holes. What about for history? You've got the Dark Ages. It's a catch-all to hide stuff in, and you know, maybe.
It might be worthy of investigation. I know a lot of people listen to these audio chats and put comments later with their own research. So, yeah, anyone wants to expound and expand on that, I'd be happy to enter comments here. So, please do.
Along with some of this sort of unraveling of NASA and unraveling of science and unraveling of scientific history, perhaps a bit, with these things like Stonehenge being really questioned and all these. Pompeii the other day with Unreal saying, well, Pompeii again, how, and I think people are very much starting to question how much of history can we really trust at this point? So I think it's a,
well, we know recent history is so manufactured. No recent history, and we're gonna lose it. This 9/11 thing is gonna just go down as fact. That's another
sad point.
Well,
what about the Holocaust? I mean, that's down as fact now, isn't it? In the minds of many.
Sure. Oh yeah. You know, one thing somebody brought up. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, and they said that humans like stories that make them feel good. Something feels good. Doesn't matter what the truth is. They'll go with that feel-good story. They don't like stories that make them uncomfortable and tend not to believe them and discount them and throw them out of their mind. What do you think of that?
Well, absolutely. I've got this noise going on in the background, which I want to get rid of.
Okay.
But I can't do it easily from here. But, yeah, yes, a good point. But it's that inconvenient truth and the other lie.
Lies that make you feel good. Yeah. Yeah. Lies that make you feel good.
Well,
that's right.
That's what that is. You know, it's like the salesman seducing us by making us feel good, you know, flattering us. Whereas the guy can't come up and sell you something by saying, look, this is bang average, really. There are stuff that's better. My price is like a little bit worse than other people, but you know what? You know, that's all I got. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Honesty doesn't work when you're trying to fleece someone. Speaking of fleece, did you see that story I posted on fakeologist.com about this alleged sheep in Australia that had 40 pounds worth of fleece on it? Just found it in the wild, and they call in a professional sheep shearer to save its life by cutting it. Does that sound remotely possible? They gave the sheep a name, too. They called it Chris.
Perhaps it's mutating, you see. It's proving evolution or something. You know, this thing's suddenly got this massive afro. He's a new breed of sheep. It'd be good for the wool trade, surely.
Oh, but he was a wild one, they said. And they found him wandering, and they saved his life by shearing him. I put that under, I should have put it under my poll section, but I just made a post about it saying, we being fleeced by this story. Like, even the most generic, innocuous stories, I wonder if we're being fleeced. That's
our
gullibility.
Certainly, we are on lots of little ones and little things, all like that, all the time, I'm sure. But I don't know that specific one. I did see that you posted it, and I was listening to something else that you posted, so I hadn't quite got around to it. It is interesting to look at those little innocuous, seemingly innocuous little things. I think they've got banks of stories that are just like from years gone by, and there's just cases if they've run out of news, they just bring them up and just chuck it out. It's fact, so it's legally permissible, but it's not actually something that's just happened very often.
It's just a story. Yeah, I'm convinced that there are regular writers for every paper, whether they're real people or not, or just fictitious names. They are just generating all kinds of fake stories, from the really mundane to the big ones. I saw there was a big fire near the airport where I work in Toronto last night. It was called in at 9/11. I thought, oh my gardens, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it might be a sign there that it's an inside job.
Or a drill, or both.
Whatever it was an inside job, yeah.
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 So I just thought, wow, it was right at 9/11, huh? That's a very important part to put in the story. This is what happens to me every day. I read the paper every day, and I just try and go through the stories that seem, half of them are international in the local papers, not even local stories, but get the sheep stories, and we don't have any local news. They just pull these stories from all over the place, and if Australia media is making up good stories, they'll put them in, or really that's what it's all about. So now we have the creative minds of the entire world generating fiction that is news, and our local newspapers don't have to have anyone local doing anything. Just we have probably computer programs that grab these stories off the internet, what used to be called wires.
You see a little campaign in the social media breaks out when they want to promote it. Something wants to be promoted, it seems. And you cross all these stupid little sites, you know, BuzzFeed, What's Its Face, you know.
Yeah, Gizmodo.
Oh, the whole lot of them, and there's like a campaign that goes across, and you can see page after page of Google search, all with these little sites that are putting out this same message. And yeah, I mean, they're just, I suppose, what are they? You can do it all from one hub, can't you, almost? You know, it's just a bit of admin.
Are you listening to Globebusters with Jaron and Bob at all? Have you been able to get into that?
Yeah. Yes, I do embrace that, and I posted to Bob's comment the other day, didn't I? That very sort of, I thought, balanced comment, which approached the sort of clues and clues approach to the flat, the FE subject. So I thought that was good. That was good balance, and I liked the fact that he was into clues. He's an ex-pilot, I think, as well, isn't he, Bob?
Well, he says he's been flying for 35 years, so I'm not even sure he's ex at this point. Probably still doing it, and he's...
Yeah, he's cool, and I do like those guys, and I'm very much, and I watched them following the, it was great, wasn't it, when they looked at the International Space Station, they got the live feed, which should have been done before if it hadn't been, but, and they looked out the back, and you look from one view, one guy got one view, didn't he, out of the back view, and someone else got a front view, and it was really bright in the front view, and you could see the sort of the planet lit up. And then at the back view, it was much vaguer, and it didn't seem to be going over the same cloud formations. And it just, it didn't seem real at all. But I thought that was good. They were looking at that. It worries me slightly when Bob quoted a Dave J video, which he'd done on Perspective. J worries me. You know, he's definitely one of them for me. You know, one of those jokers, those jungle surfer type, you know, jokers in the pack with some truth and some bullshit.
Yeah.
So I'm very wary all the time, and I'm wary of the. I am still wary of the discussion of the shape of the Earth and the pseudoscience which comes with it, I think, and which puts people like Kay off, I think, I'm sure, and lots of people, but still excited by the whole subject.
I'm puzzled that Kay is so adamantly against it. I really am. I know. To me, it's contradictory. It's an incongruency. And side Kay's mind as to her thinking there, because I don't discount anything I'm told anymore. NASA is just pumping out the fakery at a rapid pace, just a rapid pace, crazy pace, that the only ones that really promote in the media, all Earth. They're at the pinnacle of it. So Why wouldn't you question them? I just don't understand why she's so adamant in opposing it. The aspect of it.
Well, I think there's an element of she thinks it's stupid, you know, they, because that long-time stigma and the, what we've been programmed to think that it's primitive thinking to think that the Earth is flat. I think partly it's as simple as that's worked on her, you know, partly.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredibly powerful. And people in this field, we like to think of ourselves, that's perhaps why we get here, because we like to think we're clever, you know, we don't like to be fooled. And like just you said earlier, people would prefer the convenient lie, the one that makes them feel good, whether it's true or not sometimes. But no, that's a bit too simplistic maybe. I just think...
like that. I never really gave much thought to old Bob Gore, what's his name? Not Bob Gore, Al Gore's naming of that climate change movie, Inconvenient Truth. That was quite craftily.
Like, for me, that's a pretty obvious thing. He's trying to turn it around to make that kind of thing that happens in his favor. But really, it's the other way around. The Inconvenient Truth is the big corporate machine is a fucking liar. And and everyone's going the other one.
Yeah. And one more thought I had that I didn't write down. I have a lot of thoughts when I listen to these podcasts. I never get them written down. And of course, once you finish listening, they're gone from your mind. But I was listening to Jay Analysis, that guy, talk with Chris from HoaxBustersCall.com. They were just talking about the different isms, communism, capitalism, socialism, Marxism. Jay was really giving some great insight into how universities work and how thought is controlled. I guess I'm mixing it up a little bit with Jaron, who was talking about research at universities, how you cannot do research that you want to do. You have to do research that's being funded by corporations that want to find out more about anything that promotes their worldview or product. But anyway, getting back to Jay, he was purporting or giving the idea that the people that control us, they created all these different isms to test which ones work and which parts of ones work. So, for instance, communism might have mostly negative elements to it, but there might be some really good elements that they will take and make into their new ism, whatever it is we're moving towards. Fascistic corporations or totalitarianism, corporatism, whatever it is that we're living under and moving to. I thought that was a really great idea, that they're just creating all these petri dishes of social experiments to see which ones work. So, for instance,
Jaronism. Maybe, perhaps he's one.
Which one? Sorry?
Jaronism.
Jaronism, yeah. Yeah, he's an ism.
Perhaps
yeah,
he's following on with that concept, yeah. But,
And that was great, which is probably why they keep North Korea going. We don't know what's happening there, but if they really are keeping all those people literally in the dark all the time, that would be... probably people from all over the world at the elite level studying this experiment. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I get your point about North Korea in the dark. And are they having a sort of some kind of experiment with North Koreans?
I'm saying, yeah, they literally have created a dialectic for other purposes. But I would say some of the leading social scientists, psychologists, controllers, psychopaths, North Korea going, as we are told it is, literally in the dark halftime with the power outages, and they're studying these people just to see if they can incorporate that totalitarianism or communism or whatever you want to call North Korea's system, see what parts, how people react. And it's a giant social experiment. Why else would they keep that awful system going years, 60 years, 70 years later?
Well, on a very basic level, North Korea stands as an example of what happens, how the other half lives, so to speak, doesn't it? You see South Korea with its, you know, modern life and polished and O'Hallahan sitting back with his coffee and, you know, and skyscrapers and things and a good successful business model. And then you see the North, which is going up, you know, doing what it's doing. And it seems very dark and austere, although they've got a very small carbon footprint.
Yeah, they got no carbon footprint. They got no carbon. They're carbonless. Carbon.
I mean, they're paragons of virtue, actually. I think North Korea is a fine nation if we're going to follow the logic of Al Gore.
Yeah. But anyway, so That was a pretty good thought that I think Jay's analysis. I can't remember Jay's last name or what he calls himself. Jay Dyer? What is it? I'm losing my mind now.
But he was anyway, on with Chris. Always, Chris from Hoax Battle was great, yeah.
Yeah, Jay's analysis is pretty deep stuff. Of course, he gets into a lot of movies, and then he makes me want to go watch these movies, and I forget to write it down and then forget to go watch the movie. But that would be one way of watching movies that I might enjoy, when he tips you off to go look for something, and then you can go off and watch the movie for whatever he says is relevant to what we do.
Yes, my daughter and I are in a situation where father and daughter meet a couple of times a week, and she's 11 years old, but we go to the cinema. We do the cinema, and I get through it by that. I look for the agenda and study what's going on, little for little clues, and what's the agenda here with this next Hollywood movie, you know.
And did you see Oliver Stone is doing Edward Snowden movie called Snowden?
Oh, I did, yeah. I saw you put that up. Yeah, well, there you go. Well, he's such a tool, isn't he? He's such a,
you know
JFK.
That? I was thinking about Ollie the other day. I think, what's he up to these days? He's been quiet because we were talking about his JFK movie, and I never even looked at his 9/11 movie. Did you look at that?
No, I think like you, I just couldn't be bothered. I just thought, I don't want to watch so much fiction that's pretending to be some reality.
I didn't watch it either, so.
It's just so polished and boring to us, perhaps.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's right into it, though. He's their man. He's their... I think Jay was mentioning, Blue Moon was mentioning that John Frankenheimer was their man, Stanley Kubrick was their man, Oliver Stone is definitely their man, create the CIA fictions that are reality.
Yes, and Spielberg's there for some other big picture messages, these big, broad producers, yeah. I mean, Oliver Stone, we used to think he was kind of like, he was credible, didn't we? That he actually really might be telling us some truth. But, yeah, that's mainstream alternative right in your face there, Ollie Stone.
All the money he needs for a polished gem of a movie. That's his reward. I guess that's enough reward. Do what you want to do, as long as it's message.
Well, at least Kubrick was quite interesting the way he did it. But Oliver Stone's movies are a bit more sort of, you know, not quite so compelling to me.
Well... maybe they're just made simple for the masses to consume. Yeah, Kubrick was a little more cerebral, but there's no way he was telling any truths that weren't authorized.
I mean, you look at the nuclear bomb propaganda of Strangelove. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, he was just a big propagandist, really, wasn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, did you listen to Rolo's send off to Kaham? Rolo was here a couple hours worth of soothing and word.
I heard her talking to her at the end of that audio, and she was saying things like, "I think people are fucking idiots if they, you know, the people are going to think you're an idiot if you're talking about FLIR. They'll just say you can fucking fly around it. You can fly around, but surely there's a probably a clear answer to that from the other, if it was flat, you could just fly around in a circle, couldn't you? And you're not allowed to fly over the Arctic. And these are the big questions we've got. And sorry, yeah, I don't know if that's a conversation we talk about that, but Irolo was playing music as well and things.
Aaronism was saying how Captain Cook crazy trying to go around the continent, and he basically gave up on his voyage because he kept ending up in places.
Like, whatever they are, say, well, whatever, seemed to get longer, didn't they? Get wider and wider. That's an accusation that seems interesting.
They don't come to a point.
And what about the Antarctic Agreement? Something's going on there. Surely that's obvious to people, you know. There's something weird.
Saying that the flight down there is actually a $20,000 flight. It's well with outside most people's ability to go, and it only goes to a prescribed point. And, of course, when you're flying, you don't really know where the hell you are. So it's just all set up beautifully.
There's a very big story from when we're children growing up in England about Scott trying to get to the South Pole and failing and dying famously. I got right. That right. It's not the North Pole, is it? But it affirms the sort of how hostile and how difficult it was to get there. You know,
you watch the movie called Antarctica that I think I've linked to it. It was a whole study on the stations down in Antarctica, where it's so cold and what they're doing, and it's sort of a diary of a lady that's working there you go down for herbs a year, get renewed all the time, and most of the people just come for the summer, and then there's the hardcore ones that stay through the winter where it's always dark. And you watch that?
I didn't see it, but it is interesting to me. It's interesting to me what goes on. It's interesting, you know. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. I read a book by a guy called Ranulph Fiennes called Scott of the Antarctic, looking back at the old history of travel down that end of the world. That's something I ought to check out. What they're trying to say, these what's actually going on today, what they say is happening.
Yeah, it's basically the official story. Can you give 2 minutes, or you got to go?
I've got 2 minutes, but I have got to go soon.
2 minutes here. Just going to go on mute. All right, Tommy, can you hear me? Tommy, can you hear me? Great song.
Yeah, I like that band, really. Yeah.
Are they going to make a comeback? Do they have another reunion coming up?
The two of them left. I mean, they're still good guys. Roger Daltrey had a hit album with a guy who, famously a guitarist who had cancer, from an English band.
Okay.
He was a high profile cancer case. This guitarist, and then his head got shaved, and he went on tour and did an album with Roger Daltrey lead singing on the album. Then got to number one, and now he's had this big operation. They've cut half of his body out or something, his bowel out, and he's survived. He's pulled through. So that was an interesting little vignette, maybe. But I was really pleased with it all. You know, I was really pleased that he'd survived, and I thought it was a great story.
Ever really survived from cancer, though, which is just really out of control cell growth. I just don't understand how you can get it out of your system. It doesn't make sense to me logically. Of course, you can cut pieces and burn pieces and really target pieces, but I just don't understand how you can get minute microscopic cells out of your system that are dangerous.
Well, I don't know. I don't understand it, to be honest.
It's not logical.
You cut out a big part of it, and then the rest of it sort of gets, you know, the immune system kicks in and kicks out the rest of it. That's the kind of way I imagine it.
Yeah.
Now, just quickly on Captain Scott, who was a big thing that we learn as children here in England, and he was about the Antarctic. It's Scott of the Antarctic, and he was a famous explorer, and he failed. There's this famous failure that we're educated with in England as we grow up. Every school child knows about it.
Heard of it.
And so that's what we had about the Antarctic, and it shows how hostile it is down there. It affirms it, and there's this famous case of a guy called Oates who said he left the tent and sort of committed suicide, sacrificed himself for the team. It's a very famous story in England. And he said, you know, I'm leaving. He was in the middle of the night, and they were already suffering, and he was holding them back. He felt or something, and so he went outside and said, I may be some time, and he left the tent and never returned. That's what they found in the diaries later. That was part of the story. It's a very famous story. And I don't know. I just thought, well, perhaps that failure to get there and show how hostile and difficult it is was kind of an important message that's been sort of massaged into us. And we've got this guy called Ranulph Fiennes who does all these explorations down there, these trips, and he gets his fingers frozen off and stuff. He's an ex-SAS man. He's a military guy originally. A maverick SAS man. It sort of fits the bill that he'd be the sort of the propagandist who goes and does all these adventures down there to sort of these famous sort of sponsored adventures to get in our minds about how hostile
doing it now
is.
Current guy,
he's still Ranulph Fiennes, his name is, he still does these things. He's very famous in England.
I never heard of him either. Yeah,
explorer from England. Perhaps every country's got one, you know.
We don't have any that I know of. I can't name you one. We have our
Chris
ukulele
Hadfield,
playing astronaut, Mark, or whatever his name is.
Chris Hadfield. Yeah, well, that's a claim to something. But he's an explorer.
Claim to nonsense. Complete nonsense. Yeah. But, yeah, we just don't have explorers anymore. Or you have a couple, but there are no explorers. Nobody's looking into anything anymore. We don't even have media fakery explorers, really, besides us. We don't have anyone looking into anything. We don't have anyone discovering things in the way that maybe they did 100 years ago, or maybe they didn't. Maybe they weren't.
There's real scientists, but they're not famous, are they? You don't
discovering
catch
anything,
them on
or do they not have them?
Facebook.
Maybe they don't have the money because they're not being funded in anything real. Maybe they're all channeled into this control grid of where nothing really is being discovered on any great level. Up any new elements lately, or? Well, there's a whole bunch. Madame Curie did a whole series of elements, didn't she?
The true scientific exploration is being obviously withheld. That must be one of our big questions. You know, what's the real science? You know, what's the big things we haven't been told about? What it really is existence? What is going on here?
We not really have any exploration going on. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, Big Bang Theory, I've heard scientists, I mean, people are doing, I think science does evolve and go through these things, and eventually the Big Bang will be outmoded, you know. There's someone else will come along with another theory that's kind of more persuasive, but people will have disproved it kind of, and then it just lurches on, and people forget that what people used to say, and isn't that how it works? And people only have a certain lifespan, so they live sort of 70, 80, 90 years, and then they're gone, and you don't live long enough just to work it all out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're just blips. Just blips, and that's why any of us never make a difference. We never make headway or progress. Only the people that coordinate the intergenerational research get ahead. The rest of us just come, figure it out. By the time we figure out, it's too late to do anything. Then we're just too tired and old and get motivated to carry on, and then the next generation is not interested at all in whatever we're into, and then they have to start all over again and fall down and build up and learn. The intergenerationalists that can coordinate research, they're the ones that are getting ahead and continuing whatever they're doing, running us into the ground. They're the ones that have it figured out.
Exactly, because if we've been fed bullshit half the time, we've got nothing to sort of go intergenerationally on anything concrete, have we? Because it's always, absolutely. I'm not expressing myself well, but I agree with you.
Well, that's enough. You just have to say I agree with you. That makes for a great conversation.
I agree with you.
Oh, thank you. I agree with me too. But
I don't agree with you all the time when you're posting things like Russian bitch putting up. Or a jungle surfer and stuff. But I think I do generally agree with you. Your general gist and your sense of things, that's why I'm still here, I suppose. Otherwise, I'd be, I wouldn't stand it.
Jungle surfer, he mixes in a lot of crazy, but I still listen to him because, for instance, his last thing on Iran, I thought was probably right. Probably right how the Persians are more advanced. And I wonder if they even know how negative the publicity on Iran is against them, because they engage Joy American products going all the time. I'm sure they hate their government even more than we hate ours.
They've got one of the highest rates of plastic surgery, I believe.
Right. There's different levels of Persians too, huh? Well, I wouldn't think anything because we don't hear anything about them. I've heard there's different levels of Persians as well. We have a lot of Persians here. They don't call themselves Iranians, by the way. I think that's just a British label that was put on them, and they're given divvied up their portion of sand over there. But yeah, there's different levels of Persians. I've heard there's an arrogant level, there's a very nice level. They have a bit of a caste system like every other group of people. They can't even be pinned down to one real group.
No. Was Freddie Mercury a Persian?
Maybe half Persian. Wrong. Oh no, I think he had elements of that in him. I think he might have been a mix.
Right.
But
the
point
Freddie
is, though,
Balsara. I don't know. I probably got that wrong.
Yeah, I
but
saw a bit
Persians,
of the documentary.
I don't know much.
On
the 1979 revolution when the Shah came in was where I just about remember that growing up. I was kind of mildly interested in it as a child. He was the old Shah, which is the old sort of school British educated type Shah. And then he left.
The American stooge. Well, he was taken out because I think the population was getting tired of his corruption. So the powers that be bring in the replacement, which is usually the opposite end of the political spectrum. That person in for a generation because that guy came from Paris, for God's sakes, the Ayatollah.
Well, we got the Ayatollah Khomeini. Did he come from Paris, you're saying?
But he was an exile there. He was a religious exile. And that's where he was waiting. These are just leaders in waiting. They're always in exile somewhere.
We got this very clear dynamic played to us where by the old sort of Persian, the old monarchical rule sort of went out, the old school British or whatever, and then in came this nutter. Which had people, I remember people they showed this film to us over and over again of the new Ayatollah coming in and fanaticism in the streets, going crazy, cheering and everything, this revolution. So they used that wave of fanaticism and then
Well, that could have been all propaganda. Been all and yeah. Who knows if there was a big crowd cheering the guy on? You know how easy those are to manufacture. Who knows if Hitler spoke in front of a huge stadium, millions of people going nuts?
Well, the other really convincing way to get a crowd to do that is to tell them they've got a genuine revolution. You know, they probably will all go like that. You know what I mean? But really, it's all under control.
Yeah. I like that, getting back to Jungle Surfer, I like that he's question. I think it's him that's questioning. Did Obama even go to Alaska? Or is this all green screen technology? Or how is it? Because you have all the technology to do these things. Is it necessary for him to go there? Are a lot of the things staged?
A lot of them are. I mean, goodness me. I mean, absolutely. How can we question wherever that we see them? You know, wherever they're going. You know, they obviously go lots of places. They're busy, but at the same time, they green screen news in all the time. If it was deemed appropriate for national security, they'd do it at the drop of a hat. I'm sure they do.
I like to go rent out a green screen and put myself somewhere to maybe show how easy it is to do it. I just wonder if we can get a home green screen kit. Must be able to do that.
I've done it actually. My friend did basic filming. Yeah, he just sort of put up a green. Yeah. Cloth and did it. It's not
right?
Difficult, I don't think.
So you could create so you can get the software, and of course you would just need a green kind of green material for a backdrop. So for instance, you could do a video for your band and put yourself wherever you wanted in the world.
Yeah, he did it with me. He's done it for me. I've got a little sort of example of it somewhere where he did it. It's a bit ropey, you know. You can see the breakup on it. Oh, I can tell that's green screen, you know. But yeah, he did do it.
Oh. It would be very instructional to see that, just see the ropiness and see how you could do
it.
And maybe it would be good to see a non-professional version, how we can look for instance, seams that take some digital touch-up to clear up the seam joins and the connections where reality meets fakery.
Well, it's weird. You get this kind of wave-like feeling sometimes. You know what I mean? When you're watching those screens. I'm not sure if the wind blows the green screen at the back and it actually waves. I've seen some of those in, I thought, the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, so you mean if it's a curtain, it would cause problems. Yeah.
I'm not sure that hasn't happened. I'm not sure I haven't seen that, you know. But, yeah, something weird goes on. Anyway, with Rodriguez, that Rodriguez guy, in an interview a couple of times on the street down there, the backdrop was going like sort of Hall of
Mirrors. It was going in and out, yeah, exactly. Really for only the deep researchers that really spend the time and effort into digging into these things. It always seems to be a waste of time when we get the big picture that we're just dealing with fakery.
Yeah, I'd like to. It's good to sometimes I've done it for the last year or whatever in the forums there with Zilephilex. So we've done a huge amount of, it's felt like a huge amount of research on various ops and various little psyops and things. And we've questioned.
Yeah, you guys are going full blast for a while. Yeah, it's amazing how people come and go, huh? I haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, not for a couple of few weeks. I think he just sort of, perhaps he needs a break. Feels like a break. Argos, I hadn't heard for a few weeks, but he posted again yesterday. People are still around reading. I think. I hope so. You know, Felix. You know, hi, mate. And we've done a load of research together. I was going to say, and you just go through phases in a way. I mean, perhaps that's a little bit like people coming and going from the site. You go through a phase, get right into it. And as you say, you kind of think, well, I've looked at all the details now. You know, do I need to be wasting my time? Want to move on to the big pictures, important things, or maybe. I don't know.
Well, August is more of a month for Europe. Is that true in England, too, or?
A holiday month.
Yeah, people are really off work. I know France shuts down in August. You'll confirm that with me.
Oh, yeah, it's holiday time. Everyone needs a break. We all do. Yeah, absolutely.
So is that the same where you guys are? Does it get very quiet there? Business shuts down?
Not really. There's no real change through the year as far as business goes. The holidays don't. There's a few little public holidays, and it's nice to have them in the summer there. But I don't know. Perhaps it does. It's a lot of people may say it does. I don't know, but it just seems steady.
All right. Yeah. Nothing much changes here in August.
No, it doesn't shut down.
Usual
here. Yeah, I'm sure it's like Toronto. Yeah.
France.
No, I've been
France. My impression: France is shut down in August. France, maybe Germany's not.
Yeah, sure. Different countries have different. There's sort of different things. Yeah, no, I can believe that.
I think the EU would synchronize a lot of the schedules up because it would be very inconvenient to do business when one country is completely quiet, supposed to be integrated,
trade
and energy and all that.
People were saying that about Greece. They were saying they've got a completely different pace of working and different cultural way of working, and therefore it was in the EU. It didn't suit them to be part of that system.
Yeah, know, the No Agenda show says that Greece are some of the most productive people, but we hear in the media that they're the laziest. Which is it?
Yeah, what's that presented view? What's the play there? Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
No. All I know is that Germany holds most of the Greek paper and much own everything, as the Greeks refuse to pay even the interest on the debt. They just take away the assets and they're becoming German.
Well, I mean, that's above me, over my head. I don't understand what's going on in that big political game. I don't, and the finances and the...
Well, I only get my political information from the No Agenda show. That's one of the reasons I do listen to it. They're useless, of course, with hoaxes, because they just laugh them off as silly events that are probably true or even wackier than true than it is portrayed. But this is how I get my news on Europe and Middle East and America, basically, through these guys.
Like a presented cartoon reality, you know, but that's perhaps the presented view, like you're saying. You get your mainstream news through there, presented in a sort of a little bit of a twist to it. Yeah.
How do you listen to Globebusters? Sit in front of your computer and just watch the 3-hour YouTubes, or do you take it on the road, audio file?
I have to listen to it in front of my computer, sitting in a chair.
Okay.
And so that's at the moment. I don't have a smartphone. I've got a dumb phone, as SMJ calls them.
Okay.
At the moment. So at the moment, that's where I'm at. And I look at it when I'm at home, and I've got a keyboard here. I'm trying to write songs on one hand or whatever. And I've got a computer here. I'm in my element. So I can sort of have things on all the time. I've got a TV over the other side of the room going on with the news or the sport or whatever. So they've got all this information.
Oh, is that right? So you've got a lot of media blasting you at once.
Well, if I want it, I can turn it all off.
Okay, so you're really multitasking like crazy in your office.
Yeah, in my living room. That's where, yes, I'm just,
That's pretty. Do you have to pay a TV license fee? Is that still going on there?
Yeah, you're supposed to, yeah. Yeah, of course I do.
But do they come and collect it, or do you pay it electronically, or...
Pay it online, and you just set up a standing order monthly or yearly. You can pay it. And,
is there any way they can verify that you are even... Why, if you don't use your TV, and I don't want to get into your situation specifically because we're public right now on the airwaves, but how would they know if you're watching your TV? Are they using a digital technology where it's reporting in on what you're doing? Or if it's over the air, they have no idea if you're receiving a signal because you don't transmit back.
Well, there's a lot of talk about it, of course. And they used to be, for years, we've had these vans that go around. There's aerial on top that they say can detect if you were listening, you're watching TV or BBC or something, and they go and park outside your house. And now they can tell you, listen to BBC and come and knock on your door. They've got proof. But I've never heard of a real case of that happening. Never. So
can't be. No. You cannot tell if someone's receiving a signal. I don't believe that.
Well, it's supposed to be for the BBC, you see, because it's the British Broadcasting Corporation. It's public. It's our channel.
I understand.
You know, we pay our license fees. So if you said you watched all commercial television, someone argued in court once that they watched all commercial television, and therefore they never watched BBC or listened to the BBC radio, therefore they didn't have to pay their license fee, and they won, I believe.
For the most part, people just roll over and pay it because they couldn't be bothered to fight it. Almost
because they think it's a good thing. They like their BBC. It's not a lot of money. Yeah, it's all right.
How much is it a year?
Well, I don't want to show. I don't. Oh, of course I know what it is because I'm always paying.
Okay.
No, it's. I think for a black and white, you could still get a black and white license. People.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's 150 quid or something, and then a color one. I think is something like 300 quid a year.
Two different prices. That's crazy. Man, a lot of money. It is a lot of money, too. That's crazy. What if you have a satellite dish? your exam?
Black and white was cheaper. Why would black and white be cheaper? It cost more money for the colors.
Yeah, but what about a satellite dish? Would you be exempt?
No, you've got a dish. And now you get a dish, you're going to need a license because you're watching BBC, you see, on it, in all likelihood.
It almost seems like an absurd test of compliance license thing. It almost is the next step would be taxing air, which, of course, they would like to do. Who would pay that? And they say, no, I wasn't breathing today. I'm not paying.
Well, they're doing it already with this CO2, of course, aren't they? They're making CO2, dangerous. So we breathe that out. We're breathing out CO2. We're not even getting any benefit in breathing anything in here. It's just what we breathe out, I suppose. But I forget what my point was. What was I saying before that?
We're just talking about TV license. It's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. I thought it was a joke for the longest time. And that's why I'm asking you, because I keep waiting for someone in Britain to say it's a joke. It's not a real tax. It doesn't make any sense. It's so absurd.
Okay, so when it first came in, TV first came in, you had the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, and a man in a suit would come on and say, this is the BBC, and it was our sense of identity, and our television world began. And they said we were going to have our British Broadcasting Company, and we would pay into it so we could have television, and it would fund this television station for the people, you see. It's very important. And that became a very powerful organ and body, and respected all around the world to this day, I think, their high quality of programming. And they can, because of that, because it's funded publicly, it gives it some kind of legitimacy. So people hang on to that, in actual fact, rather than say just sell it out private, you know.
Yeah.
Is that to me? I mean, maybe it's just my take. But.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. We have CBC here, of course, the exact copy of your BBC, but we don't pay for it in a licensing fee. It out of our high taxes.
Yeah, I suppose because when TV first came in, really, then they introduced it, I guess, that it just sort of, it's been around for as long as TV's been around in England, so people are just used to it. We just pay it, you know.
Well, it definitely isn't a compliance level very high, or do they even record it or publicize it?
The amount of people that pay it?
Yeah, well, do they make a big deal and... Oh, and publicize those that don't pay and lead them out of their house in handcuffs?
No, that it's self-policing, I think, really nowadays. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how it's self-policing. And it's pretty much people just do it, you know, and they just don't need the hassle of most. The average person in a home would pay it, you know, I think we're just thinking it was just easier to pay it than not. And you could get done. I've gone to court for not having it before. I made the mistake of letting a guy in my house and showing him, you know, all very honestly. Have you got a TV? It was when I first moved out of home. Have you got a TV? Oh, yeah, yeah. Have you got a license? No. I didn't know about that. Have you got to have one? You know, I said that. I ended up in court and had to pay a fine.
Really? You couldn't plead ignorance?
Well, they come around your house, knock on the door. Well, it was ignorance. Yeah, but I couldn't. No.
Give a break for being honest. Thing.
You've got to be careful about being honest in this world, Ab. You know that. You've got to play the game.
Yeah, but well, that's fascinating.
Do you know what I mean? Isn't that just the fact? To play the game in this world, a lot of the time you have to do, just as we've said, you have to sort of bend the rules, and you have to sort of be selective with the truth, because the whole world is a nonsense kind of game, really. That's how it feels to me sometimes. And when I used to play sport at a reasonably high level, the higher I got and the tougher the competition got, the dirtier, in a sense, I had to be, and how the more of the rules I had to bend and push it to the edge. And you can see, ultimately, it's almost like life. It's all a big game, it feels like, sometimes. I don't know. I'm waxing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, you're right. It is a game, and you're told to play it honestly, and then we hear stories about the guys at the top not playing it honestly, but I don't really know what the point of that is, whether... Trying to scare the little people into being good boys and girls, I don't know.
Well, you've got to abide by the rules, haven't you? Otherwise, the game would fall apart.
Yes, we always have to make examples of the rule followers. That's a little deal they play in the No Agenda show all the time. I'm a rule follower, aren't you? It's all propaganda, of course, too.
Oh, there's a lot of it about that little boy on the beach with his little boots hanging down. You see, the three-year-old boy from Syria, the refugee fell off the boat. The migrants.
They're making a big deal about it here because they're trying to play up some kind of connection link that he applied here and was turned down. And are they making this a global story now. It's a global psyop, in other words.
His little boots, yes. My Peruvian friend, she's a daughter of an ambassador. He was a military ambassador from Peru, who I met her in Cambridge. She was here doing a language course years ago. But we became lovers, and I went over to Rome, where he was ambassador there. Her dad was an admiral. Lovely Claudia. But she put it up on her Facebook over in Peru there, in Cuzco, or Lima, where she is at the moment. And she put up that little picture of that boy. The same one we got on all our front pages here in England, way across the planet, the plane or whatever. And
What's she saying about it?
She was saying, this is our world in his hands. This is terrible. You know, this is a nightmare. You know, she's caring. She's compassionate. She's moved by it.
Yeah.
And I just came on and just said, propaganda, you know. This is propaganda. I bet it's staged. It has to be staged. I hope it is, you know, in a way.
Well, yeah, they aim these things. The way to get to women is through children. Natural. Always get to the women first, and then they complain to the men, and the men go out and shoot somebody. That's how the system works.
Claudia's got two little sons. She just saw their little boots hanging down there, like every compassionate parent would, like any compassionate person would. Yeah, I mean, it's not a complicated con, really, is it?
No, it's evoking just the most basic biological triggers. Children to women to men. That's how it works. Because a man would just step over that person at the beach, probably, but the woman would scream at him to do something, and that's how it works.
Well, we have to look after our children, you know, and it does make sense, doesn't it? And next day in the news over here, I think the next was Cameron, our Prime Minister David Cameron, was saying that, talking about dropping bombs on Syria. So the next
That'll
day
help.
You hear him saying it. You know, he talks about the boy with the little boy, and then the next sentence it's dropping bombs somewhere. So, you know, the old military machine and heavy industry needs to get moving and create here we go again.
Now let's drop those bombs, because they're so selective as to who they kill. Oh, here's a little boy. I'll make a left turn and kill this terrorist over on the left, a fully grown man. Yeah, no sense at all.
It's absurd. And originally, we saw in the Arab Spring, because this Syrian stuff happened around at the time of the Arab Spring, we saw all that jerky mobile phone footage of nonsense. It's not even a secret that the West sponsored the rebels at that time against Assad. And Assad was this great big baddie. And now it's just turned into some weird civil war. And they've just made a whole mess over there. It's going to be completely contrived and sponsored as ever by the West.
I don't think Assad has done anything particularly wrong, per se, other than maybe just, outstay his welcome. Maybe controllers are sensing that he's been in there a little too long and they need to flip him out for somebody new. I don't know if they have anyone new in the wings that just be put in. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe there is no clear alternative, and they just being the sense that trying to get this old guy out, but he's so strong and we can't get him out. Maybe they're still creating an alternative. Maybe that's how it is. Because people always get restless with the status quo, I think, a lot of people. It's always out with the old, in with the new, as the Masons say. Maybe if they don't have a clear alternative, like we always, where we live, of course, West, we always have an alternative leader who's always coming up. Just, you know, they say how elections are never about who they elect, it's about who they throw out. Of course, you always need someone to come in if you throw someone out. I'm just thinking maybe that's one of the possibilities of what's happening in Syria. People always get restless with whoever's in charge, even if they're doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you've got a military presence there, you've got a reason to be there, a reason to sort of stimulate the Islamic fundamentalist agenda, give that credibility. I don't know. Yeah, is it real? Is Assad not sort of on the same side as the real power and just sitting there and letting his presented reality play out?
I think you have to be. Oh, everyone is at the, I think everyone operates at the behest of the queen or whatever power she represents. We're all at the pleasure of the queen.
Well,
I've heard that saying.
Yes,
that saying has meaning.
My husband and I. Well, if the snake of imperialism or whatever has a head that started somewhere, then it certainly sort of came through the British Empire and at some point in recent history, I guess. But I don't know. yeah, there seems
to be quite a lot. It's been going on forever.
It can seem to us, Toronto Tim and Cambridge Tom, that it's the center of things, but is it really?
Did our friend PsyOptiPickle take all that stuff down off Let's Troll forums? Were you able to see? I didn't even look. All that negativity about us.
Well, it was quirky. It's almost bizarre that he's come back and been friendly. And I'm not sure. I think he did. I think he took it down. And he was calling.
I haven't even looked.
Like a den of vipers or something, wasn't he, as well? And it's sort of quirky that he's come back. But I like the kind of, in a certain way, the laid back idea.
I don't think he's been too dangerous, really. He's amiable at this point, so.
Absolutely. And he talks some sense, some interesting stuff, you know.
Well, he always has, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, and going back to a year ago, I didn't quite get the essence of the problem. Everyone just was up, and it was almost a gang thing where I wanted him gone. And anyway, I'll just be accused of being blind.
I've got specific issues with things that he said on specific research, which I disagree with strongly.
Respond?
But he hasn't ever responded to those specifically. He hasn't.
You'll have to pin him down on an audio.
Yeah. I mean, he's said it in writing, really, what his viewpoint is, and perhaps it'd be an agree to differ. You know, he thinks some way, and I think it another. But, yeah, no, I have made my point several times in writing and on audio. But, if it comes to it, it's fine. At the moment, I think it's fine. He's made some posts, but nothing too intrusive or we can just take everyone on face value. I think, you know, what I like about Clues Forum is their vetting and the fact that the discussion has been a little bit about that with Hoy and things about their tightness with things and keeping, you know, if people are banned, then would you necessarily have them back? I'm not necessarily, but a tight ship. But this one in Fakeology, the good ship Fakeology, is an amiable sort of cheerful, we go forward, we take on, we listen to everyone sort of thing, perhaps, you know. And, you know, why not have someone who's questionable here and someone who's questionable there? That's all right. As long as there's a bit of sanity going on, we're all right.
Yeah, we're not too inclusive, but we're a little more diverse and more of a loosey-goosey group because no great breakthroughs come from this site, but, there is a breakthrough somewhere. We like to point it out here and there.
Well, Zilephilex and I were the first people to talk about Hillsborough, all those football psyops, and Bob Geldof foreshadowing the Dunblane shooting 17 years in advance. And there's a few things that I've been involved
in
which I've thought, wow, you know, I haven't heard it talk about anywhere else. The Martianist.
That's true. June, you were promoted by Simon at Clues Forum. Yeah, you've been hat tipped numerous times. You've done good research, yes.
Yeah, I found what's her name? Krista McAuliffe or whatever, when we were looking at the Challenger victims. I found her. Well, I mean, I didn't even think it was her at first. I found her. I said, it can't be, can it? It can't be. Same name, Sharon McAuliffe. But yeah, that added to the Resnick dude Simon had been looking at. And the next thing, someone's come out with a whole fucking lot. A whole lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't even know this hasn't been followed up in any detail. Who these people are like with their same names, most of them.
Yeah, well, I encourage Chris to make some phone calls because he's good. Well, yeah, I encourage Chris from HoaxbustersCall.com to make some phone calls. Going to do it. He said, use your very back technique and maybe exposure. I think it would be great. I'd love those phone. Those phone calls would go viral if they ever went through.
Brilliant. I'd love to hear Chris do that. He's got a lovely tone about him. He's just sort of, he's not
it would be great.
Chris, is he?
No, and all those numbers, all those people are listed. They're all public people. That means they should be accessible. A lot of them work for public universities, I think, or different agencies of the government, which should be accessible in public. They should have to speak.
It's an honest question.
Yeah, I told Chris the honest question would be something like, oh, there's a video going around that says that you didn't die or you're the same person. Do you comment on that? Say to that. Not,
yes,
sir. Is it completely complete bollocks, as we say in Jolly Old, or what is it? Say this to this wide audience that's watching.
Funny. I mean, what are you going to say? What are they going to say? You know, they'll probably say that the classic of stock answer will be, yes, I am. Yes, of course I am. You know, or... No, perhaps you can't because they died, and that is a bit sort of disrespectful to the dead. They just have to play that line, won't they? Well, certainly not. No, I have been talking. People always say that to me, but I've got the same name. But no, I'm not that person.
Yeah, I don't know what line I would use if I was them. What would the intelligence agency have written for them in this case? Would it be just to completely ignore the call? Would it be just to never address it? I would be fascinated. This is very important, and I'm sure the CIA would like the feedback.
Well, the parents there at the takeoff, you know, the film of them, you know, you could see the duping delight in there. The smiling and the reaction. It was completely unnatural, really, for if that had really happened in reality.
Another thing Jaronism brought up in his last Globusters is we know that rockets explosively the Earth, the explosive force. Why do all the rocket launches in Avril in Florida, why are they always so slow to start? Whereas a real rocket, a kit rocket we can put in our backyard, you light that baby up, it just explodes out of here. It doesn't. There's no slow liftoff.
Well, look at drag racing or whatever, or they just boom,
explosion.
Yeah, it's unnatural. I looked at a Chinese one the other day, and it's so slow. It's like a train moving out of a station. I think someone said that before. Ah. Are these all? But from a long distance, we know that things can, and perspective, things can look slow, but. It doesn't look right. They've got cameras zoomed in on these things.
But yeah, why is this thing so slow to take off? It should explode, and it should not accelerate. I would expect that the explosion would be the fastest acceleration. Number one, it's pushing right off against ground, which is far denser than air, so it would just be like a sprinter. Wouldn't a sprinter really get his best push when he's pushing against the blocks, so you can push out against something?
Well, we can look at rockets in a small version and make them, and they don't act like that, do they? They don't look like that. They just go bang and pop and fly up straight up in the air. I think they're a completely rubbish form of flying anyone anywhere, a rocket, aren't they? It's just so primitive, really. It's a lie, caught in a lie, really, of silly lie, I think, aren't they?
The coyote, Wile E. Coyote of the Looney Tunes fame, when he straps a rocket to his back, I think that's more realistic than what we see. When he lights the wick.
It's so dangerous. Would you ever want to fly anywhere with a rocket, let alone 250,000 miles or whatever it is, or through the atmosphere? No way. Take me in a fucking jet plane and I'll have a look, a try or something. Yeah. You know, but it's rocket seems absurd. Tim, I've got a company here. I've got to go to work.
All right. Nice chatting with you.
Great to talk to you, my
friend. Have a good show. All the best.
Have a good day. Cheers, man. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. There goes Tom Delpra. Sunday, September the 6th, 2015. Talking to you from the North Shore of Lake Ontario. Golden Horseshoe, we call it here. Toronto, Canada. Tom Delpra's over in Cambridge, England. Definitely one of the fakeologist's most ardent supporters. Thank him for that and all his contributions. Some sublinks at fakeologist.com. We have forums.fakeologist.com. That's where Tom Delpra starts a lot of threads. Welcome to start a thread at any time. We also have fakeologist.org. Really, that's a useful backup site at this point. And what it has is links to non-fakeologist.com sites in case the site does go down. And I'll say quite happily that the site has not gone down in a long time since I got rid of some fairly obstructionist scripts that were on the site. Mostly the plugins for WordPress, which is the most popular blogging format in the world. Allegedly 66 million installations. I like that number. And a lot of the plugins are made by third parties and they don't get updated and they tend to crash the whole system. But I think I've found most of the bad ones. And so far the site's been running really well, knock on wood. Let's hope it doesn't crash today after I spoke of it. But fakeologist.org has some backup links. So we have both fakeologist.com, fakeologist.org. And streaming, live streaming, at your chat is at s3.fakeologist.com. Quiet, but when I'm talking, it is streaming live. We have s1.fakeologist.com, which was the main weekly show. It hasn't been updated in quite a while, but you can listen to that. s2.fakeologist.com. I have all the shows of interest that not my main show I put on there. I think K-Ham is recycling there. And many other audios. I'm going to put all the Globe Earth Skepticism podcasts over there. You can listen in. And essentially what I'm doing is creating streaming sites. It is the future of radio. Future radio will be podcasting or delayed or local broadcasting where you'll be able to control everything. Or if you're not do advanced programming, which of course you would have to do, put these audios on your phone. And you would just go to a streaming service that would stream it for you and program it yourself. And that's what I've created the streams for. Streams work on all devices. And you can use any program you want of your choice to stream on your phone, on your tablet, on your phablet, computer, on your box, whatever the different flavors are. So it's all there for you. You just have to go get the stream address and plug it in and you're golden. You have chat.fakeologist.com. That's where I announce when I'm coming onto the audio stream. So keep an eye on the chat. I have schedule.fakeologist.com, which I should put up this week's schedule on there. And if you want to join in on a audio, then you can your mail in there to a website called needtome.com. If you want new posts emailed to you, right side of fakeologist.com, just plug in your email address, subscribe, and that way you don't have to keep coming to the blog if you would do that. Of course, I have the same feature on my other blog, moreab.com, moreab.com. It's a great way to keep track. Of course, we have RSS feeds. We have fakeologist.com/feeds. We have the conference call. If you want to do an audio chat on your own and have me publish it, don't have a computer, fakeologist.com/c. Of course, the main thrust of the site with audio is audiochat.fakeologist.com. The first step would be to buy a microphone. Buy that link there, right to Amazon. We've got other sub-sites. We've got whole section that I'm going to grow. Put a story that's innocuous usually, and I'll put it up, and you can vote whether you think it's real or not. Fakeologist.com/polls, P-O-L-L-S. Testing out a new Bluetooth headset. That Bluetooth headset is called a Blue Parrot, I think. Trying out the E350. Go get that off Amazon.com. John LeBon has entered the lobby. Come into the live stream. John LeBon probably just finished his Australian roundtable. Actually, I was going to go into his roundtable, but I can't do it mobily. You cannot go use Google Hangouts too easily on the mobile, which is why I don't there much. But I was going to ask him about the Australian sheep named Chris, who had 40 pounds worth of bull sheared off of him. Go over to the lobby and see if he's there. All right, John LeBon was in the lobby, and John LeBon is here. I'm going to give him powers to talk. John LeBon, I've given you operator status, so if you ever come into this room and someone doesn't have talk power, you can grant them talk power.
Oh, cool. I feel like a deputy sheriff.
Well, exactly. You have been deputized in the Fakeologist live stream. If anyone, just so you know, this has happened to a few people, there's no login kept track of on TeamSpeak. So if you create a new identity, I'm on a new computer, for instance, it won't know that you're John LeBon, because it basically every login has its own serial number. So you came in here, you previously verified, but you must have switched computers because it didn't know that you were the John LeBon. And so I just reauthorized it. I think if you call TeamSpeak, it alters the keys as well. The serial number's the keys. So just a little hat tip. I noticed some people come in without talk power, that they had it before. But because they switched computers, it doesn't know who you are.
I reset my computer usually once every month or so. So that would explain that.
Oh, does that mean you reinstall TeamSpeak?
Yeah, I reinstall everything. And the reason I first got into this habit is because the editing software that I use to capture the screen for making videos, and just for editing videos now because I'm used to it, you only get a one-month free trial. And so rather than pay $400, yeah, it just started off as a workaround for that. But I actually like it this way because it forces me to keep all of my files in good condition, in good order. Like, I know where everything is. If I have to find a video or if I have to find this or that, I know where it is. And because I have to clean it up once a month to back it all up, it's just got me into a good habit. So that's why I do that. The only pain in the backside, though, is that with TeamSpeak, every month I'll lose my operator deputy sheriff badge, but hopefully if I'm on good terms with the sheriff, I can have my badge back. How's that sound?
Well, yeah, that's fine. That is a pain in the butt for you. But if anyone wants a voice status, the best way is for me to authorize you because I have to actually hear your voice. But you can email me your serial number. I can't quite remember how to get it, but every login has its own unique ID. Just email that to me, and then I'll insert it manually into that. Well,
yeah, no worries. No worries. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, mate. What were you talking about before
I was just riffing. I was just riffing on. I had Tom Delper from Cambridge, England over. Nothing specific. I was just telling everyone websites at fakeologist.com. And actually, I was going to – I know you're probably just off your Australian round table. I'm going to do some quick math here and work out that it's almost 10 p.m. Brisbane time or 11.
Well, yeah, it's just coming up to 11 p.m. So we actually finished our show 5 hours ago. And yeah, I got home. I like to go for walks and listen to podcasts. And I just finished listening to Blue Moon, that 44-minute podcast or 45-minute podcast that he did on the New Cokes, where he played the clips of Dr. Strangelove and that Holyfield character who I've been meaning to look up. But that was a terrific podcast. Thank you for posting that to your blog. I wouldn't have found it otherwise. It was terrific.
Oh, he put a link to it in a comment. I always like to listen to first usually before I post them. I guess no one saw the comment because not too many people found it until I highlighted it. So, yeah, I put that in the recommended audio category. That's a feed on my blog that you can subscribe to, have it come into your podcatcher, get all the audios that I recommend automatically. Unless, of course, they're YouTube links. YouTube links don't have isolated audio, so they don't download per se. You have to go look at them. I was going to interrupt your Australian roundtable, a link I just posted on fakeologist.com. So Chris, the Australian sheep, found wandering around with 40 pounds worth of wool on him. That story?
This is literally the first I've heard of it.
Maybe you could, if you can, click over to fakeologist.com and take a look at Chris the sheep. And trying to get into the habit of posting stories. If I don't make any comments, I'm going to put them in a poll section at fakeologist.com/polls. Just ask the general question, is this a real or fake story? Because I can't always tell. And I just want a general impression on... I think innocuous stories are put out there all the time to test the gullibility of the masses, sensitize them to the media's lies and hoaxes. Have a look at that if you can, and maybe video and the pictures are enough to convince you that this is a real sheep.
All right, so I'm just taking a look at this article now. You've linked to the Ottawa Sun, and the first thing I notice, and I'm sure you notice this as well, lost Australian sheep gets a much-needed shearing that yields 89 pounds of fleece. Now, let's put on our Zachary K. Hubbard hats for a moment.
Yeah, 89 is not a number that I've ever heard of, so I'm not going to call that
what's eight magic plus number. Nine?
Yeah, but that's 17. 17 is only the emergency number in France. Not even going to go that far. I think we can go, or Zach can go too far with his adding and subtractions. I don't even know if Zach would find any problems with these numbers.
I'm using push to talk, so sorry if I'm a bit slow here. Well, and again, I'm just scanning this
Take
for the first
time.
So
have a look. You don't have to keep
this
looking.
This is like the fourth stanza of the article. It says, the most wool sheared from a sheep in a single shearing is 28.9 kilograms. Then they've got in brackets 63 pounds, 11 ounces. 6 plus 3 pounds is 9, 11 ounces, 9.11.
I like that. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. I didn't see that part. Yeah, see, this is why we put it up there. General populace, fakeologists worldwide to look at.
Then it says that it was taken from a wild New Zealand merino, which is a type of sheep, dubbed Big Ben.
Oh, I thought his name was Chris.
Sorry, this is referring to the previous biggest
shearing. Previous biggest, Big Ben.
Yeah, yeah. And then it says that the next paragraph is, he's looking really good. He looks like a new man, this character said. Yeah. As the now 44-kilogram sheep recovered. So, look, I guess this is one of those articles.
You do have some numbers. There are some numbers. 44. Yep.
Yeah. So this is one of those articles where I think to myself, well, I don't know. Zachary sounds very confident in his numbers, and I haven't reviewed enough of his work to verify them. But the basic idea makes perfect sense to me. So I look at an article like this and I think, yep, this could very well be a coded article. But then I think, well, now that I'm looking for 9s, 11s, and 17s, I'm seeing them. So, like, I'm not convinced either way, but I'm definitely open-minded to it. I love listening to Zach speak. He was on your audio chat a few days ago. It was terrific, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He just goes, he's got all these numbers so baked into his head now. He doesn't probably even have to check his notes anymore. It's just straight off, but. And I asked him what the number was of the day that he keeps seeing, and he says it's 44, actually. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is a coded article.
Yeah, maybe. But like I said, this is the first I've heard of it. So, and look, I'm at the point now where I struggle to even pay attention to the news. So if you hadn't have told me about this sheep, I wouldn't have known.
Not Australia famous.
He might well be. I mean, that's. I'm at the point now where I don't pay any attention to the news that's on TV, and I still scan the newspapers, but it's gone from being, you know, several times a day, just quickly seeing what the headlines are, to maybe once a day I'll check what the headlines are, and I've lost all interest for the time being.
No, I understand. Actually, I heard one of your last Australian roundtables, and you did sound quite disinterested. I thought even some of your panel members were puzzled by your reactions, your non-reactions to their stories, including Lindsay, who reads the paper.
Oh, yeah, that's episode 47 you're talking about, and we've only got a couple episodes left for the season, and that was easily my flattest episode of anything I've ever done. And I'm the first to put my head up and say, yep, pretty poor show from me. But, I mean, some of the stories, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, if Lindsay and Ethan didn't bring them up, I'd never know about this stuff because I just don't pay attention to the news anymore. And I kind of feel like I even said this because it was after that episode that I logged on to audio chat and made that 1 hour, audio post about gravity and the rest of
good
it
one.
And KM and the rest
was
of it.
That was a good
one. So, thank you. And I said during that I kind of feel bad for the Ethan and Lindsay because I kind of feel like the format of the show is still fine, but it just isn't something that I'm as interested in now as I was when we started the show with that format, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you've almost left them. You've moved on, sadly, them.
Well, look, I wouldn't put it like that. I think the format of the show is its own thing, and I think it does serve a purpose. Maybe most fakeologists are way beyond that kind of analysis of the news, but I think it still has its place. The issue is, after doing it for almost a year now straight, I just personally have lost interest in it. You know, it's not so much, I don't feel like it's me moving on as it is, it's a format that serves a purpose, and it's served that purpose for me, and now I have other interests.
Content is now, for you, difficult to digest because you know the level of fake so over the top, and you wonder, are you just basically a movie commenter now? I find the analysis of these stories like talking about a movie, latest movie about what this character in this movie did, and never thought that was interesting. Get into Star Wars and talk about all the conflicts, and I've never cared about any of that ever in my whole life.
Yeah, I understand, and it's the same with the U.S. Presidential circus that's going on right now with the Republican nomination. I remember even 4 years ago, I paid close attention to that kind of thing because I still thought it was important. And I'm at the stage now where you tell me that that Biden is leading for the Democrats or that Trump is leading for the Republicans or whatever, and it's not that I disagree with you. I just don't care. I don't care.
I agree.
I have zero interest. Zero. That's even a year ago, I still would have had some interest in it. But now I'm thinking, I don't even know if I have no reason to believe the polls. I'm not saying the polls that they're lying. I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't make a difference. Who cares?
Oh, I know the polls. Yeah, the polls, hear them all the time. They're just way ones, and I think they're largely fabricated as well. And the people that run the polls, obviously, they're paid by the parties to so-called independently come up with numbers, but you know that they massage them whatever way they want, and they're paid to properly massage them to make them look real in the sense that they might take real numbers, but they just alter the question, they tweak the question, they tweak the answers and portray them in a way that's favorable. And It's just the old saying, there's lies, lies, and statistics. Whatever the saying is that really equates statistics with lying.
Yeah, well, I've made this point before, and I'm not the first to make it. It's that mathematics, and statistics is just a branch of mathematics. Mathematics is a tool, like any language, you can use it however you like. And if people are using it to obfuscate facts, and they're trained in doing that, then they can make a mathematically sound proof, or they can present a statistically, like a truth, like statistics that aren't lying about their data set. They're just represented in a certain way to tell a certain story. That's all it is. Mathematics is just a way to tell stories. And the people who run the show seem to understand that much better than most of us mere peasants.
Sharonism was saying that same thing. You know, all the Globusters series, I don't know if you've ever mentioned them, but Sharonism was one of my favorite guests on your Baller Skepticism Skeptics Roundtable. Such a great speaker, like yourself, of course. I really enjoy listening to him. And his friend Bob, my God, another really great talker.
Well, clear thinker. Was Bob the one who left that detailed and thoughtful post that spoke really highly of Clues Forum?
Unreal put it up, or Tom put it up. Yeah, these guys are very clear thinkers, and I think their episodes where they watch the International Fake Station every week, I have to shut that thing down if they keep it up. You guys keep picking apart. Go technically off the air, I think.
Well, I've listened to the last three Journeyism live streams, like his regular show, Globusters. I haven't listened to the ISS-specific ones yet. I mean, there's just so much content getting put out there at the moment. And I'm someone who listens to a lot of podcasting, especially the last few months. It's just become, that's my habit now. I just get out of the house. I just walk around, listen to podcasts. But I can't keep up. And I'm interested in this stuff, you know. So I think
it's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. That's exactly the word that I'll use.
And Mark Sargent's always introducing other hosts I never heard of and never would find on my own. There's just no way. It's just too vast. And these found Stars or Souls, and she's linked up with this Patricia Steer, who's sight for sore eyes, and she's linking it up with Stars or Souls. They're not making any great revelations or headway, but they are somewhat interesting to listen to, because in the end, people just talk about the same things that we like to talk about. In the end, that's really all there is to talk about when you're blowing apart, when you're just blowing apart everything, the theories that we look at and like.
Well, I've got an exclusive scoop for you. Would you like to know who Patricia Steer is about to begin a weekly show about Flat Earth and other hot potatoes with? It's a name that's familiar to all the fakeologists out there.
I thought it was Stars or Souls guy. Doesn't she do it with him every week, the black guy?
I'm not sure if that's the case in the past, but there's an advertisement. I can link it to you now if you tell me just where to put it, maybe in this TeamSpeak client. I just saw an advertisement for Patricia Steer, and she's going to be working with, well, I'll let you take a guess. If it wasn't Stars or Souls, can you think of another name that might be hooking up with Patricia Steer? And it's not Mark Sargent?
I say it's Mark Sargent, but he's got Bob. Another, no, who's he got? Jonathan.
Jonathan from Jersey.
Yeah, I like Jonathan. I looked at him. Well, he seems like a... seems real, I think. It's got to be one of your 12 apostles that you interviewed. Or 11. But right now, nothing is... really hitting
what if
me.
It was one of the people doing the interviewing? That narrows it down.
You?
No, not me, Matt. I'm taking a break from all of this. You already know that.
Yeah, I know. Well, you might be a leopard changing your spots. Who's interviewing? I'm drawing a blank because I'm now kind of dizzy from driving.
No, well, we wouldn't want to make you any more dizzy. I'll just tell you straight up. It's David Weiss is going to
David
be doing
Weiss.
A show with Patricia Steer, according to an advertisement that I just recently saw. So,
okay.
Promises to be interesting, but I'm not sure if it's going to be your kind of show, Ab, because apparently they'll be talking about all the fake shootings, which is fair enough, and the 9/11
like
media fakery, which is fair enough. But there's also
going to be some
geoengineering and some harp and some crop circles. So it might not quite be a show for you, Ab, but you never know.
Enough there for me to listen to. I don't mind listening to the crop circle stuff, but I. A fakery, myself. Listen to anything. I don't. But yeah, I would listen to that.
Well, I'll
wear
listening.
Some nice outfits.
I'll be listening. I'll
and
give
listen
it, I'll
even
give
more
go.
Closely.
But I'm at the point now with the amount of time and effort that I've personally put into what I call baller skepticism. Unless they were breaking genuine new ground on, like, if people aren't breaking new grounds on a topic, I haven't got time to listen to them because there's so many people out there who are doing work that I haven't
heard
before.
You don't like the mindless babble. You don't like the babble, I guess.
It's not that I have anything against it, but if there's that much content out there, I'm naturally going to prefer to listen to the stuff that can put new ideas. I'll give you an example. I listened to that Blue Moon podcast tonight, and I've seen the film Doctor Strangelove, but I saw it before I learned about nuke fakery. So now when he's playing back clips from it again, I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is 50 years ago, and people were watching this, and they were completely oblivious to what was being done to them. You know what I mean? Oblivious. Watching this film, the way that they've got that guy carrying on, you know, it's like, Mr. President, here are the six facts you need to know. Fact one, you know, fact two.
Never even
three,
liked the film much, did you? I didn't like it much as a film.
Well, you know, this is one of those great shames of mine, but I'll say it anyway. When I saw Dr. Strangelove, not only did I believe that nukes were real, but I was afraid, because at the time I didn't understand the whole Russia is controlling.
No shame.
The point is, I went out and downloaded a copy of, I went out and got myself a copy of Dr. Strangelove, specifically because I was considering the possibility that maybe we were about to enter into a new Cold War, if that makes sense, right? And I'd never really taken much time. So not only did I download that film, I also started looking into how nuclear bombs work and, you know, I learn about the 50 megaton Tsar bomber and all these things that I'd never taken the time to ever look into. But I didn't for a second question if it was all fake. That didn't even go through my mind. I mean, how far I've come in, you know, 18 months, whatever it's been. You know, it's amazing looking back.
No, I understand. Just give me a minute here, John. I'm just doing something. If I put my mic on block, you'll know that I'm just occupied for a minute. I'm just going in and out the store here. All right, John Lebon.
Back.
Is your name, is that a stage name or is it your given name? Bon.
Nah, it's not the name. It's not quite the name that's on my birth certificate.
All right. I was thinking that's an interesting name. How did you come to choose it? I described how I came up with Avarado.
To
make Lebon. Like Simon Lebon.
The John part of my name is legitimate. The Lebon part is obviously the make believe part. But I liked one of the things that helped me get into all of this was Propaganda by Edward Bernays, and I read that book back to front and front to back that book. I couldn't get over how much truth was in a book that was written 80 or 90 years ago. He just says it straight up, and he's not anyone who says it. So then I started looking at Gustave Le Bon, and I never read any of his work completely.
Name?
But just
Gustave Le Bon?
Gustave Le Bon.
Gustave?
Yeah.
Heard of him.
Oh, he predates Edward Bernays when it comes to crowd psychology and that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. This is good information, as usual. Okay, Gustave Le Bon. I thought it was Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran.
No, you haven't heard of Gustave Le Bon?
Just now. If I did hear about him, that didn't make an impression.
Oh, wow. There you go. So I wanted to come up with...
I'm always learning. Always learning, John.
Yeah, that's... Well, I guess we all are, aren't we? So that's... we fakeologists. So anyway, so... I wanted a nom de plume. And my original plan was to call myself Jono Pro Bono because... One of the things that got – actually, I thought I explained all of this. That's the problem. You talk to so many people, you forget who you've explained this to and who you haven't. So, listeners, if I've explained this, I apologize. But really, long story short, I was going to go with Jono Pro Bono because I was so frustrated with how much money the ABC was receiving, our national broadcaster, and how much money their hosts in particular are paid. And I was like, I'm going to spend my time exposing the ABC. This was back before I understood how far – rabbit holes go. At the time, I thought exposing the ABC would be a worthwhile, you know, use of my time. And anyway, so that was the plan.
The Australian Broadcast Corporation, for all that don't know.
Yeah, that's right. And so, and they get more than $1 billion with a B per year, and their leading hosts are paid more than $400,000 a year. It's incredible. Anyway, so I was going to go with Jono pro bono, but then I found that people thought that the bono in the name pro bono had to do with the guy from U2. And at first I was like, oh, okay. But then I realized this nom de plume isn't working because people don't get it. They don't get the pro bono part of it. So then I had to come up with a new one, and John the Bond popped into my head. So that's what I went with.
Well, I've never heard that story. I kept meaning to ask the interesting information now.
Yeah. See, for me, I don't find it that interesting. I mean, if people really wanted to know my real name, it wouldn't be hard for them to find it out. And then what would they do? You know, I can't see how they can do anything good with it. So the only people who would waste their time looking into that, I can only imagine haven't got good intentions with it. So why make their job easier? You know, if they want to find out my real name, then they're going to have to come and meet me in Brisbane and have a beer and get it out of me that way, you know, rather than just have me make their work easy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They won't have to beat you with a stick about the head, will they?
I guess they could try, but I mean, you get my point. Why make the trolls? And for me, that's the only people you have to worry about is the trolls. I have no fear of any agencies or whatever. If they want my details, I'm sure they can get them. The issue is the trolls. And I mean, I've been trolled so much just under John Le Bon. There's so many John Le Shill, John Le Fag, John Le Bon is gay, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's so, pretty lame. Pretty high school, eh?
Well, that's what the YouTube truth community is. It's toxic. You know, it's a truly toxic environment. I think there are reasons why it's made that way. So, why give the trolls, why make it easy for them? You know what I mean? Why make it easy?
I agree.
The longer I've been doing this, the less I care. I started off, if you had said to me when I started off that I'd go on camera and people would know what I look like, I would have said, no way, you know, it's not worth it. But I've been on camera, people know what I look like. It doesn't matter. If and when the trolls finally do crack the John Le Bon code and find out what my real birth certificate name is and where I really went to school, then what? You know, the only people from my cohort at school who would care that I'm doing a show would care for the first 5 minutes of listening to it. They'd get bored and they wouldn't care anymore. Do you see what I mean? People care about this stuff a lot less than people who are in the bubble. They think this is so important and it makes such a big difference and yada yada. And in our lives it does. But to the average sleeper, this is not that important. It's really not. The reason why they don't pay attention to us is not because they think this is important, but they've done their own calculations and they've done their own research and they disagree with us. No, they don't care because they don't care. If they cared, they'd be here with you and me chatting about this right now. They don't. They're watching TV. They're going back to sleep. Literally to sleep, and then they wake up and they spend their whole day asleep, and that's just how they're going to live their lives. They really don't care. At worst, they're going to say that Ab and John are crazy, and that's it. They don't care.
Trolled, yeah.
They just don't care.
I agree. I sense that you were rather aggravated with the great masses, the great unwashed. I sense exasperation in your voice that you're just fed up. You're tired of explaining things to people that just don't care. I understand that.
Well, look, I have heard a few people say similar things, and I do take that on board. And I don't try to sound if I sound frustrated, I don't want that to rub off on anyone else because that's the worst thing that you could possibly want.
Were aggravated. Yeah, I heard you.
When was that?
Well, maybe it was, you do a lot of broadcasts. Maybe it was in one of your Sunday sessions or letting it loose, getting angry at people that were not paying attention as you thought they should.
Oh, yeah, that was at the back end of a long weekend of drinking. I know what you're talking. Okay, I spent about 15 minutes where I was just like, you know, the people who were doing the research matter and the people who were just listening, I don't care about them. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And that one got taken down. For playing a two-minute clip of Bill Hicks. That's what I got taken down for. And all these people were leaving comments, John Le Bon, you shouldn't use music. This is why you shouldn't use copyrighted music. Da-da-da-da. I didn't even play any music. I got taken down for a two-minute Bill Hicks clip. You know?
Yeah. Which,
That's funny to me on a number of levels, but I managed to get a copy, so I'll just upload that one at some point in the future. There's probably 4 or 5 episodes that I did that I've had to download and I need to re-upload without the offending material. I just haven't got around to doing it yet. I don't know when I will.
Yeah, I understand. Am I coming through okay? I think my audio just went funny.
Yeah, I can hear. Yeah, no problem. But yeah, anyway, just really quickly to put a line under that. Look, I just need a few weeks away from YouTube and I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. I'm all good. Everything's good. It's all fine.
Yeah, YouTube, what it does underscore to me, I know people get on it, they put their stuff on it, and it gets pulled off and they get all upset, but it really, really emphasizes to me the fact that YouTube is a private corporation. It's a private space, and they don't like what you put on, then you really don't have any great right to complain about it. I don't know why people go haywire and make videos upon videos of them doing what they can do. Like arguing about the fact that the sun comes up every day. Back. You got to live with it. Don't like it. Find another system or make your own, right?
Yeah, I don't have it. No, I'm not complaining about the YouTube management. I never have. Like, they've only ever taken me down for using copyright material, which, so far as I can tell, isn't even YouTube or Google's fault. They're dealing with the media companies, you know, yada yada. I'm not complaining about YouTube, the way that they run the place. I'm grateful that I've got a platform where I can put my stuff out. I mean, it's amazing, this technology that we have. I'm talking more about just the, I mean, if you upload a video and you get, say, 2,000 views on that video, and you have the policy of trying to reply to every nice comment that you receive, then it's not just the time that you make making and uploading the video. There's going to be another hour or 2 hours, depending on how popular the video is, just replying to comments, you know? And I started off with a policy of I want to reply to every message and most of the comments, and I'm trying to stick to it, but it just takes so much time. And you eventually reach a point where you think to yourself, yeah, you know, there's other things I could be doing right now, you know?
Well, yeah, you're a young guy. You should be hunting down Sheilas at this point at the Barbie.
Yeah,
that's my best Australian. Sorry. Hey, Ham is a break.
Yeah, I just listened to her, what was it, 5 hour? There was a 5 hour audio chat with Kayham and Rollo at the end. And sadly, my good friend Rollo, he had another one of those episodes where he's just drunk, isn't he? And you're not really getting any new information, are you? It's just just the same.
I really don't. He's a tough one because if he does a long audio cast, he might start off only half in the bag, and then as time goes by, it becomes clear he's completely conquered. And I always spend at least part of the listening time just trying to determine his level of inebriation. Little game I play.
Yeah, he's much better at hiding it than me. I think maybe it's just one of those things you get better at with age, just, you know, still managing to articulate yourself just well enough to keep people on edge. Is this guy drunk or is he just tipsy, you know? It is hard to tell with Roland.
Well, he's good at it. But a lot of people cannot speak truth unless they are without inhibition. Intoxication eliminates inhibition, most people, including me.
Yeah, I understand that in social settings with real people, but online, why? Yeah, I don't know. We're all different, I guess.
Oh, well, online, it's been a bigger pressure there. You're permanent, really, unless you go ahead and delete the stuff. You're permanent. You better make it good.
Yeah, I understand that if you're doing a show, like say you're trying to present like a weekly show or you're trying to present professionally, whatever, but audio chat, who out there is judging anybody by what they've said on audio chat? Who?
Oh, it should be more casual and relaxed and not to worry, but I think Rollo likes to ham it up, and he's a good sport. He's a good promoter. He mentions the station name, which is an old DJ rule that they had to always announce the call letters to remind the people what they were listening to. So he does a little old school that way. Good sport, though.
Oh, he's good value. I think if it weren't, I mean, Rollo is a, you do need characters and personalities, and he adds a certain personality to these audio chats that I think, especially for newcomers, they find very welcoming. He's got that kind of personality, and it's probably different. You've been doing this for years now. I've been doing this for a year now. So we're probably more comfortable. But for the newcomers, I think someone like Rollo, it'd be good just to have them around to make them feel a bit more on ease, especially because Rollo spends so little of his time actually breaking down any important details of events. He really just spends his time, you know, just clowning around, really. I think that probably makes the atmosphere better for newbies. And that's probably one of the things I like about what you do the most, is you're encouraging people to jump on audio chat. So they probably, a lot of them, are better off with people like Rollo around, I would imagine, but that's just my inference. I can't really prove that. But I guess you need to get the feedback from newbies to see what they have to say about that.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good intuition. Yeah, he makes it easier for people to step up to the mic, and he gives them a few technical tips as well. No, he's good. He's a cool addition to the Fakeologist crowd, and I know he'll be happy to hear that. He is a big fan of all this kind of work. Very very quick to point out who he likes and who he doesn't like, for what reason. He's a big fan of yours, of course.
Yeah, he's a big fan of mine. I got the impression that he, in that last audio chat, that he, how do I put this? Maybe Kayham and I disagreeing about the shape of the Earth. It's a bigger deal to other people than it is to me or Kayham. Sometimes I get that impression.
Yeah, I'm really puzzled by Kayham and her view on it. And you know what? It just proves that there's always a position that, or an idea that just doesn't sit well with different people, and you almost can never predict which one it's going to be. I would think that the ball earth thing is a huge problem, and you guys all illustrated a list a mile long that I can't even comment on because I don't have the facility or the way ability to research these things. I can't get up into a balloon and picture. Really tricky, and therefore one might think it's far more susceptible, played with and lied about. Stuff we cannot prove. We can never prove any of this stuff other than from a ground level. So I'm really perplexed by her position. I really don't understand it. She's just adamant about it, destroying all the research.
Yeah, but for me, I get where you're coming from, but for me, I think to myself, well, she's obviously made up her mind, and she feels that the ball model is solid enough for her to believe in. And then I say, all right, then fair enough. But, you know, that's it. I don't see the need to dwell on it. If she ever wanted to talk about it with me or on or off the air, we could. But other than that, I really am not that fast. But I got the impression from listening to Rollo chat with her, you know, on her audio chat the other day, that it does matter to him. And I just think, why? You know, you can still like both of us. It's not a big deal, man. Who cares?
Well, it's not a popularity contest. We don't get paid for it, either of us. Sure, you don't, and I know I don't. So people can pick and choose, just like when they walk into a restaurant. They choose what they want to eat. Boom. And it's never going to be what you think it is. People are very, very selective. They can be. But she still perplexes me. She's explained it. She said she's going to come back and respond your specific audio next. And it doesn't really get, like you said, it doesn't really get us too far ahead in the long, in the end of the day. It's the researchers that are trying to do experiments, trying to pose clearer theories to explain the nature of where we are. And I'm grateful for it because I know I wouldn't do it anyway. I just am happy to listen, soak it all in.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Yeah, I'm of the opinion at the moment that the number of people involved in the YouTube Truth community and the non-YouTube Truth community, of which you're a part, the number of people who are genuinely looking into this with objective eyes and looking into different lines of their own thinking, not just, well, you know, this character said this, so I'm going to go and look into that, or this character said this, but thinking to themselves, right, I'm going to look at a whole new angle of the official story and analyze it for myself. The number of people doing that, you could probably count on two hands. And if you even need the second lot of fingers to count, then you know, you're probably doing well. That's where I'm feeling at the moment. And, you know, I just don't let it, you know, how do I articulate myself here? I'm just not too fussed at the moment. You know, if people want to look into this, they will, and they'll discover stuff. And if people don't want to look into this, if the shape of their earth is not interesting enough to spend time scrutinizing the official story, and they won't scrutinize it. You know, it's What more to it is there than that?
Oh, I agree. People have to want to pull this information, not push it on them. They don't want the information, they're not going to receive it at all, or they're going to listen and not act on it or pay any attention to it. So don't forget, I always say that we're in the same court as the propagandists. They're trying to convince everyone of a falsehood, and look at the efforts it takes to get people's attention, and then people still don't pay attention to the falsehoods even. They don't even know about the Sandy hoaxes or the details of most PSYOPs. Most people know about 9/11, of course. It's just too big to ignore. But for the most part, most people don't know details of any of them. And these guys have all the heavy artillery firing at the public all day long. How the heck are we going to get our information, our contra information out and get it listened to? The answer is we have slim and none. People really have to be seeked out for our information to get through or get an audience. We should just be content with what we have almost. We do not have the media on our side, and that's the biggest weapon of all. We only have a little sandbox that they gave us to play in, and we kick sand around in it, but overall, that's all it is a little sandbox in this huge playground.
See, I still think that if enough people wanted to use the tools at our disposal, that good, positive change could be made. At the same time, I'm thinking if that's going to happen, that's going to happen. At best, I can just make, like, even if I dedicated my entire life to all of this, all I could make would be a contribution, and my contribution won't be what decides whether it all works out for the best or it doesn't. So all I can do is just focus on whatever I find interesting, put out some videos, put out some live shows if I feel like it, and hope that people take something from what I do. And if they do, great. And if they don't, there's no point in me stressing about it. And again, I understand that's not coming through in my voice. But right now, I'm feeling less stressed out about all of this than I ever have. I feel pretty comfortable in my own skin right now doing what I'm doing, and I don't feel obliged to have to put the info out there for anyone. I mean, there is so much information out there now. If people aren't looking into it for themselves, then nothing I say is going to change that. Nothing.
Well, most people are still going to get stuck in the same old ruts when it comes to what they pull off the internet. And it is a pull job for most people. So fortunately, again, it's only going to be a small amount of proactive people that look into it. And they're going to be very confused. They're just looking for clear messages. They said to Tom Delper earlier on this call, people are looking for things that make them feel good, looking for messages that make feel good.
Well, that's one area where I think I actually agree with what Kayham's saying. She makes a good point about some of these flat earth videos where they're just using certain manners of speaking or certain tools of rhetoric and certain audio visual cues to lull people into a sense of feeling good. They get a certain psychological or mental satisfaction from it. But how much new information have they come away with? I think there are some flat earth YouTubers out there who, whether they're meaning to do it or they're not, are essentially just giving out, we call it junk food in Australia. I don't know what you guys call, bad food. But
junk food.
Yeah, junk food. It's just junk truth. It's not, it might be a 10 or 15 minute video. And if you leave feeling a bit better about yourself, okay, well, maybe there's no harm done. But if you're watching this stuff thinking you're getting new information and really you're not, then there is a form of deception going on, whether it's intentional or unintentional. And I think there are people doing that. And that's where a lot of what Kayham says I agree with. I don't see it as a case of, well, she thinks all the ball air skeptics are either crazy or in on the in on the strategy.
In on the scam.
That doesn't mean I have to disagree with everything that she says just because I disagree with her conclusion. There are certain aspects of her line of thinking. I fully get where she's coming from.
She's a clear thinker, and she's a teacher, she says, so she would have a understanding of how to convince these children of an idea. That's her job.
Yeah, I chatted with her about this when I was on one of the shows, either the audio chat with her or the Kayham. I think it was 38 I was with her, and I don't know if it was on or off the air, but I did ask her, how can you, it must be such a risk with your career to come out and talk openly about these things. If anyone from your school finds out, I mean, surely you could be sacked for saying that 9/11, no one died, no one got hurt. You know what I mean?
I agree. It is strange. I would be wary myself.
I told my boss at work that I don't believe we live on a spinning ball, and I wasn't trying to convince him. He asked me a question that somehow I could easily tie it in, and I was like, you know what? I've known you for a little while. I want to tell you something. And I told him, and he was like, oh, yeah, fair enough. It didn't matter. But I'm not teaching. My job doesn't require me to. I mean,
you're not influencing young minds.
Yeah, exactly. So, teachers, if you've read 1984, which so much of my worldview is based on some of the teachings of that book, you know, if you're a teacher, you are part of the system. And anyone who's part of the system has to believe in the orthodoxy. Do you get what I'm saying? Anyone who's part of the inner party or the outer party has to believe in the orthodoxy. You don't get a choice in that.
Well, I agree. I do. I agree. That's part of the control grid. Same with professors in universities and unis, as you call them, for sure. Got to play ball. Otherwise, be off the team.
Got to go along to get along.
Which just shows they're not really learning institutions that allow free thinking. Which is what moves society forward, one might think. Free thinking, new thoughts, putting them out there, debating them, finding out better methods and ideas.
Well, not to nitpick on you, Ab, but that brings up something that I've been thinking about lately. Some of the phrases that we use to describe society and its trajectory. And when you say, you know, this is how society or the people move forward, I'm at the point where I'm starting to wonder to myself, move forward to where? Why do I even take it for granted that there's a – and I'm not suggesting that this is what you meant by your use of that phrase. You just used it in the general sense. But I'm starting to really question where all of this language has come from. All of these phrases that we use that we don't even realize influence the way that we conceive of the world around us. Like if we conceive of society as a mass that can be moved in a direction, okay, then when we think of moving forward, the logical question to then ask yourself is – If I do conceive of it that way, even just as a conception to help me understand the concept, where next? Why do I even make that assumption?
Very deep philosophical point. Well, we move forward, right? Isn't that what we want to do?
Progress.
What is the
progress?
So you're asking, what is the goal? More leisure time? And is that what people want? Then who's going to do the work? Well, the controllers will say robots will have to do it. If you want more leisure time, someone's got to clean up the dog poop, so we'll get robots. Then I won't have a job. Then I won't be able to eat. Okay, well, another problem. One solution seems to create another problem, or one problem creates another solution. I don't know what comes first. It's a chicken and egg scenario.
Yeah, you think about it, though. If once upon a time, and these are just hypothetical numbers, but once upon a time, if you could send 200 men down a mine shaft and they mined enough gold so that the company could make a profit and all the men got to feed their families, and then all of a sudden with mechanization, it now only takes a fraction of that number of men to control the machines that do the work of 200 men, then the same amount of wealth is being created, but not the same number of wages are being taken home.
There's less levels of wealth.
Yeah, and the people missing out are just the regular peasants. But it doesn't mean that the wealth doesn't exist. It just means that it's not being, you know. This is something I talk about a lot. How do we go from one income being enough to pay for a mortgage and for a car and to send their children to school and to put dinner on the table, and all of a sudden you need two incomes and they're struggling to pay the bills? What in the space of two generations? What the hell happened?
Well, it seems like people want more. They're not happy with the basics. They need a new car every 5 years because that's what the programming is all about. And if they don't have the money, we'll just lend it to them. Notice in Mexico, they didn't have a lot of mortgages or credit cards or credit, period. And when you wanted to build a house, because I was down there once, I saw these half-done houses, and I thought, just build half a house and walk away from it? No, before mortgages, you just took your whatever money you had, bought the material and built another room or another few feet of the house. They rose up over 10 years, quite slowly, in fact. So obviously, that doesn't help instant gratification world. It's a very delayed gratification world, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those studies I've been meaning to look into. Most people have heard of it. I don't know if it's true. I'll have to see if I can find the studies, but where they talk about how you can take a child at a young age and ask them, what would you prefer, have one chocolate now or two chocolates at a certain point in the future? Let the children decide. And the ones who are happy to wait to get twice as much chocolate, you track them through life. And then you discover that generally speaking, they're the ones who've done better at school and with friends and whatever they and it's one of, like I said, it's one of those studies I've heard of, and it makes intuitive sense, but until I've double checked it, I can't be sure. But certainly that would make sense to me, this idea. Because look, I remember from primary school, the children who seemed switched on at a young age, I'm still young now, I'm still in my 20s, but already you can see patterns. And it seems to me most people, the ones who were better at making better long-term decisions as adults, they're generally the ones who were smart enough to think two steps ahead when they were children as well.
Yeah, sense. Born a planner. Well, it's the old, you go to the old, well, the three little pigs. You're familiar with that one, I think. One built a house built a house made of bricks, the other wood. And what was the other guy building? What did he build, a lean-to or a tent? I can't remember. Are you familiar with that story of the three little pigs?
Yeah, vaguely familiar, but you'd have to refresh my memory. But before you do, I've got to go and do something real quick. Will you still be here in 10 minutes?
Yeah. Just go on mute, and I'll go on mute. And if when you come back, just say I'm back. Very fine. That's the whole nature of the audio chat.
Yeah, don't feel obliged to stick around. I just I got home, and I thought, oh, there's a video that I have been meaning to finish. And I thought a good way to procrastinate would just be to jump on audio chat.
I'm just out and about. Running some errands, so I'll put you on mute. I got to make a call anyway, so that'll be fine.
Cool. I'll be back in about 15 or so. I'll see you then, all right?
Is that working? Testing 1, 2, 1, 2. 2, 1, 2. I think I'm here by myself. John LeBon here, and I was chatting with Ab earlier on, but it looks like he's disappeared, but that's okay. There was something that I wanted to talk about, and one of the things I like about audio chat is that you don't have to be too serious. You don't have to present anything in any kind of formal fashion. You can just sort of speak. And one of the things that I want a break from with some of the shows that I've done is you do feel like you have to present it, you know, in a way that's easy to digest, or that, how do I put this? I don't know. You kind of feel like you have to put in a certain type of effort. And with the audio chats, it can really just be a bit more off the cuff. That's how it seems to me. And what I wanted to talk about, and maybe get other people get their feedback on, is this idea that if we accept that nukes are fake, which I certainly accept, I think most fakeologists accept that now, then one of the next conclusions you come to is that all of the nuclear bombs, you know, in the media, especially in films, is just propaganda. But it's not just propaganda. It is, if you take a step back, kind of psychological trauma, a type of existential trauma, because all of a sudden you fall, if you believe in it, which most of us did at least for a while, you believe that your life and the lives of everyone around you can just be suddenly ended. I was thinking about this earlier tonight. I was walking around the suburb that I live in, and I was listening to a podcast by Blue Moon, and the one that I listened to was only 40 minutes or something. It wasn't that long, but it was terrific, and it was packed full of interesting clips from films that I had seen, also from news conferences that I hadn't seen. I'll have to look further into those. But it got me thinking about something that I had been thinking about prior to that as well, which is this idea that people my age, and this isn't just for people my age, I'm sure people older than me as well, it would have just been different films that were the case, but people my age, we would have seen films like Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and True Lies before we'd finished primary school. Now, a lot of people will say, well, your parents shouldn't have been letting you watch those kinds of films at that age in the first place, and I agree with you. The issue is that certainly where I grew up, most children were allowed to watch these films, you know, by the time they left primary school. I mean, it wasn't uncommon when I was a child for the children to have TVs in their rooms. And I mean, these days, they don't even need TVs in their rooms. They've got, you know, iPads and everything now, so they've got even more access. Anyway, the point is, I was thinking about the fact that I witnessed images of a nuclear detonation burning people up, like I said, before I'd even left primary school. And it was from the scene of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, where Sarah Connor is having flashbacks or flash forwards. It's hard to tell. But she imagines, she walks across to a fence, and on the other side of the fence, she sees children playing. And she knows that something bad is about to happen. So she starts shaking the fence, and she's shaking the fence, and she's getting very animated, and it's it's kind of scary stuff. Like, what's she so upset about? The mum on the other side, who I think might have even been Sarah Connor again. Maybe she's looking at herself. I can't remember. I haven't seen the film for so long. But anyway, the mum who is playing on the playset with her child, they can't understand why this woman's going crazy on the other side of the fence. They start getting worried. And then all of a sudden, bang, there's this massive flash. And then all of the people spontaneously combust. And it's kind of chilling for me to sit here, even just describing this scene. Like I said, from a film that I probably haven't seen in 10 years, but I know that I watched repeatedly when I was younger. And of course, that flash was from a nuclear bomb. Sarah Connor was, like I said, having a flash forward or a nightmare vision of the nuclear bombs going off. And part of the plot line of that film is this idea that the robots take over. They've got access to nuclear bombs. They can kill everyone, right? You follow the idea. Anyway, the point is that people my age, many of us, were subjected to this at a young age. And again, I'm not trying to absolve my parents of responsibility. They shouldn't have been letting, in the ideal world, children wouldn't be watching TV at all, would they? Really? But the point that I'm making to you is, even if my parents hadn't have let me watch that film, and I hadn't have watched elsewhere, many young people are seeing this stuff. It's not, sometimes we think of propaganda as being the stuff that they convince adults to do silly things. But the children often get caught up in it just as bad as anyone, especially with the films. And so, yeah, I had it imprinted in my mind at a young age that at any moment, not only could a bomb go off, but when it does, people just turn into skeletons with flames coming off them, like that. And what's worse is, these bombs can be, in theory, set off by robots. So if the system that controls the nuclear bombs ever suddenly takes over, they could just wipe us all out. How do I know that the systems that we have controlling the nuclear bombs, aren't controlled by such a robotic system who could gain consciousness? I mean, you can see just how far all of this goes. So anyway, it got me thinking about all of this. So I decided to go and look at Terminator 2. I didn't realize it was from 1991. Wow. Anyway, I thought what I might do is just read out some information from the film. And as I started going through the Wikipedia page, there's lots of aspects of this that I wasn't aware of. Like I didn't know that it was James Cameron film. Then I looked further into James Cameron, didn't realize that he also worked on True Lies, which was the other film that I wanted to speak about. Now, True Lies was 1994, 3 years after Terminator 2. Again, James Cameron. Again, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And again, nuclear bombs are involved. But this time, it's not a big nuclear explosion that's a graphic that we all see. It's the threat of the explosion, and this time with the terrorists. So again, this was another film that I watched over and over as a child. This is back when, we only had 3 commercial broadcasting networks in Australia at the time, and they only had one channel. This is before digital TV. So I would look at the TV guide, and if a film that I loved was coming up, I would make sure that I was home to watch it, It's funny looking back, and you can just how much things have changed. Anyway, yeah, I would have seen True Lies, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. They tend to play the same films like once every 6 or 12 months. So I watched it several times. But anyway, for those of you who've forgotten what happens in True Lies, let me just read out of the plot. Quote, Harry Tasker leads a double life, performing covert missions for the US government under a counterterrorism task force called the Omega Sector, using the cover of a traveling computer salesman. Albert Gibson and Faisal assist him in these missions under the command of Spencey Trilby. However, Harry's wife, Helen, and his daughter, Dana, believe he is a boring computer salesman who does a lot of corporate travel. Harry's latest mission in Switzerland reveals the existence of a Palestinian terrorism organization group known as the Crimson Jihad, led by Salim Abu Aziz. Harry suspects that antiques dealer Juno Skinner has ties to Aziz. After visiting her, Harry is chased by Aziz's men through a shopping mall and a large hotel, meanwhile missing the birthday party that his wife and daughter have arranged for him. Blah, blah, blah. Aziz reveals he possesses small nuclear warheads hidden inside antique statues shipped by Juno and plans to detonate one to demonstrate his power before ordering his men to torture the two. Harry, under a truth serum, reveals his double life to Helen, but breaks free and rescues her. They secretly watch as Aziz prepares to take one of the warheads into downtown Miami and sets another to go off on the island within the hour. They quickly learn that Aziz and his men have taken control of a downtown Miami skyscraper and have kidnapped Dana, threatening to detonate the second bomb in downtown Miami, end quote. And it just goes on like that, blah, blah, blah. So you think about, like, there's several different lines of propaganda that they're reinforcing with this one. And you would have worked on all that as I was reading that. You've got the Islamic scary terrorists. You've got the nuclear bomb threat. But not just the nuclear bomb threat, the clever deception of the bad guys, hiding them in statues. Just far too clever for the people at customs or border control. And, yep. Putting them in the downtown city. Going to blow up the CBD. And again, this was the kind of film that I was watching as a child. So the two Arnold Schwarzenegger films, I got to see the graphic depiction of a nuclear bomb going off and killing innocent families instantly in a flash. And I also got to see a film, a comedy film no less, that reinforces the idea that there are Muslim bad guys out to get their hands on these bombs. And smuggle them into, obviously this film is into America, I live in Australia, but same idea. Smuggle them into an innocent country and blow everyone up. And of course, these are just two examples. Most, if not all, fakeologists have their own favorite examples, but I guess this was just one that I wanted to share, something that I've been thinking about and something that Blue Moon's podcast got me thinking about tonight was the amount of nuclear propaganda that we're subjected to and don't even realize it. And then you start going back through your memory, and I'm lucky because I'm in my late 20s, I'm lucky I can still remember a lot of my childhood. I'm sure people who are in their 50s, 60s can remember a lot of their childhood, but for me it wasn't as long ago as it might be for someone who's, say, 40 waking up to the nuclear lie. I'm waking up to it now, I've woken up to it now, and I can look back and go, well, gee, you know, 20 years ago, which is still a long time ago, but it's not that long ago, 15, 20 years ago, I was watching these films, largely oblivious to the nonsense it was giving me. One of the points that Blue Moon made in his podcast was just how emasculating the notion of nuclear bombs is, because he was playing these clips from this Holyfield character. I don't know, I'll see if I can find him. Just give me a second. Yeah, so this Holyfield character, who I don't recall having heard of prior to listening to Blue Moon's podcast, he was a United States representative from California. He lived from 1903 to 1995. He was elected as a Democrat to the 78th and to the 15 succeeding Congresses, and served from 1943 until 1974. Apparently, while he was in Congress, and I'm reading all this from Wikipedia, obviously, he was chair of the U.S. House Committee on Government Operations and a Joint Committee on Atomic Energy. He was a member of the President's Special Evaluation Commission on Atomic Bomb Tests at the Kenya Atoll, 1946, yada, yada, yada. He was a strong advocate of the fallout shelters and said that the United States should build a nationwide system of underground shelters. So the point is that Blue Moon was playing clips from this guy scaring the hell out of, you know, American citizens through the media with his fear about nuclear bombs and the threat that Russia and I think even China at that stage, you know, posed supposedly to the United States. And Blue Moon made the point, how emasculating is this for the man of the house that in normal times, in non-magic bombs that can kill everyone instantly times, generally, for the most part, men are seen as being able to protect those around them from any threats that are likely to come along. I mean, sure, people could come with a gun and rob your whole house, but generally speaking, there is this notion that the women will turn to the men for implied protection, but no man can protect you from a nuclear bomb dropped in downtown your city and killing everyone. It was incredibly emasculating. And I don't want to speak for Blue Moon. You have to listen to the podcast for yourself. But the impression that I was getting from where he was going with all of this was this idea that it's not simply that they're telling us that they or that our enemies possess these bombs. You really have to think through just what effect this has on us. And sometimes it can be hard if you've grown up in a time where everyone accepts this as true. So, you know, it takes effort to try to take a step back and think, well, how has this affected me? How has this affected everyone around me? And it seems quite plausible to me, and this is where I think Blue Moon was going with this, that we have been affected in an existential way where it's changed the way that we perceive our own lives as people. You know, what and how far we can plan ahead or really hope ahead, because, you know, at any moment everything could be finished. But, you know, it wasn't so long ago when people lived, they didn't have that kind of fear just hanging, you know, hanging in their subconscious, if you want to use those kind of terms. They didn't have that. This, sure, you could die, but the idea of just everyone dying in a flash, you know, it was just didn't exist. But it did exist for me. It existed my whole life because of these kinds of films, because of Terminator 2, True Lies. And then Blue Moon also spoke about Dr. Strangelove, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, which apparently came out in the same year as Failsafe. Now, I remember as a child, there was a very highly hyped TV media event of a remake of Failsafe starring George Clooney. Now, this one I haven't checked, so I'll check this one on the fly. Failsafe. And I think the kicker of this was that they were broadcasting it live, like it was a film that was recorded and broadcast live. Failsafe. I'll just put in Failsafe film. Yeah, here it is. I found it. This is from the Wikipedia article. Quote, Failsafe is a 2000, the year 2000, televised broadcast play based on Failsafe, the Cold War novel by Eugene Burdick, Harvey Wheeler. The play, broadcast live in black and white on CBS, stars George Clooney, Richard Dreyfuss, Harvey Keitel, and Noah Wyle, and was one of the few live dramas on American television since its so-called golden age, the 1950s and 60s. The broadcast was introduced by Walter Cronkite. It was directed by veteran British filmmaker Stephen Frears. The TV version is shorter than the 1964 film due to commercial airtime and omits a number of subplots. End quote. So sure enough, there it is. Not only was this a film that was originally made about the same time as Dr. Strangelove, but they did a remake in 2000. So at that stage, obviously, I was starting to progress from genuine childhood through to adolescence, but still young. And I remember watching this. It was even in Australia, this particular film, this broadcast play, was highly hyped. And back then, I was very highly programmed. I used to watch a lot of television when I was younger. So I remember watching this whenever it went to air in Australia. Now, I don't think it went to air live in Australia, but you know, that wouldn't have mattered. We would have been, you know, happy to get it hot off the press 12 hours later, whatever the case may be. I don't know. And sure enough, I saw it. And I don't remember the actual story of Failsafe as well as I remember the hype surrounding the broadcast of it. But just looking at the poster here, sure enough, you've got all of those actors that were just mentioned in the synopsis. In black and white, it says Failsafe in that typewriter typeset. And in the background is the big nuclear bomb mushroom. There it is. Yep. So that's three films that I can think of off the top of my head that I saw at either a genuinely young age, childhood, or a relatively young age, you know, in the case of Failsafe, which was implanting in my mind this idea that, A, there are these devices that exist that could go off at any moment and kill everyone, including me, and B, that the people who are in charge of these bombs, whether they're our own government making mistakes, our own military making mistakes, or they, you know, the bad guys happen to smuggle some into the country, that there are people out there who, either by accident or by design, could detonate these bombs at any moment. And one of the things that Blue Moon said that stuck with me the most, was really a terrific podcast. I don't know if Blue Moon listens to these audio chats, but seriously, mate, if you are listening, I can't applaud you enough for that. It was terrific stuff, really made me think about some stuff. One of the things that Blue Moon pointed out was, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here again, this is what I took from what he said, but we're living in a time right now where people, most people, actually believe that there is a person who has access to bombs that could wipe out the entire world. It could start off a nuclear, mutually assured destruction that will wipe out more or less the entire world. That person needs merely only to press a button. We're talking about the President of the United States of America here right now, obviously. And this is what's going to happen. And that person gets to that position by being elected by the masses in a democratic election. But if we're to believe the official story of how democracy works, the power of the president once elected through that democratic process, and nuclear bombs, and who's in control of those nuclear bombs, the president being that person, supposedly. If we're to believe the official story along all of this, which it would seem most people do in the United States and certainly in Australia, most people do just believe the official story, we're supposed to believe that there is a man who could kill everyone right now, and he got to that position because enough people voted for him. Just get your head around that for a moment. that's actually what people think. That's what I used to think. You know, I'm laughing, but that's what I used to think, okay? And why did I think this kind of nonsense? Well, because I watched too many films. That's one of the reasons anyway. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but yeah, it's incredible stuff. So, see, my original plan tonight was just to pop by and make a short little contribution. Zabir.
I interrupt you, John LeBron. I'm sorry.
No, you timed it perfectly, actually. I just finished my little train of thought that I was making there. I don't know if you caught that, but I was just talking about... I'll just give you a really quick recap. Basically, I listened to Blue Moon's podcast tonight about Nuke Fakery, and it got me thinking about some of the films that I saw when I was a child and trying to get my head around the impact it must have had, not just on my belief in nukes, but the corollary of that. What comes as a consequence, the effect it has on your beliefs about how quickly your life could be ended, and then the way that that affects the way that you live your life. But then also thinking about, I mean, one of the points that Blue Moon made, probably my favorite point of his whole podcast, and I'm paraphrasing here, if you believe the official story about democracy, about the power of the president, and about nuclear bombs, which most people, it seems, believe, then you believe that right now there's a man who needs only to press a button or to give a few codes to somebody that have bombs dropped that could essentially wipe out most of the world. And that person, the president, got there because enough people voted for him in the presidential election.
Yeah, I know. That's powerful.
I mean, how absurd is that? But that's the common belief.
When he goes on vacation, he carries a briefcase with a remote button.
But that's what Blue Moon was saying.
I know. Was that in the Dr. Strangelove movie, those ideas?
Well, I'm not sure. That's a good question. I've got to go back and watch Dr. Strangelove now. And Failsafe and Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and True Lies. I'll have to go back and watch them now as an adult who can think for himself. And I'm sure the propaganda will be nauseating. But as a child, I love these films.
Yeah, True Lies is a truly oxymoronic phrase.
Yeah, well, they've got a really funny byline for the film. It's, hold on, let me see if I can find this. When he said, I do... He never said what he did. I mean, you have to admire.
Well, that's just brilliant prose.
Yeah. Oh, look, you got to give them credit when they do something. I mean, that's kind of cool.
I think Havering took that name for his podcast. He calls it True Lies, What Lies in Truth. Something like that's his catchphrase.
Who's that?
Is Javering. Around. He's been a long time. They call it just type.
Well, if his podcasts are half as good as Blue Moon's, I'll be listening. Because, like I said, that
you got a podcast called Guys.
You know, that I haven't heard of Jabbering, but this Blue Moon dude who put together this short, relatively short podcast. I mean, that's the thing. There are some people I can listen to them for 3 hours, and at the end of it, I'm like, well, it was nice to listen to somebody while I was walking around, but really, I'm no better for it. But then there are some people they can put together a podcast that gives me 3 or 4 new ways of thinking about things. You know, it's not to say that one group are better or the other group aren't worth listening to. It's just that it is amazing how the people who put time into their own research and putting clips together and bouncing from one idea to the next, they can have a positive impact on your own way of thinking. You know, but when I do hear a podcast like that, like with Blue Moon, I feel the need to say, hey, thank you. You know, you've helped me in a way. But
Blue Moon is very smart. He's a very good researcher. He did the JFK book. Look at the research he's done. He basically summarizes everyone else's research. He's got some of his own ideas. What a great book. I'm not even finished, by the way. I'm ashamed to say I get distracted so easily. Got links. He doesn't have the YouTube link. I told him I need those links so I can look up some of these videos he's referencing. Well, what a great book on JFK and the ultimate made-for-TV hoax. The first made-for-TV hoax. And one of the best still to this day. And then he does a podcast. Yeah, this guy, how can a guy that has a job doing something else come up with such great material, whereas the professional, quote-unquote, researchers still unable to solve these fairly mundane hoaxes, like Simon Chak, who just came up with what I think is the key to 9/11. Meanwhile, Jim Fetzer is busy working away for the 30th year on these things and still can't solve it. So have to think it's all by design, deliberately, the ones that don't solve it, and the other guys just effort into it and come up with a solution. Great work, Blue Moon.
Yeah, it is astounding to think. I mean, I don't know how many other forums are out there, but, you know, there's Clues Forum doing their research, and perhaps there are one or two others that are slightly similar. And then what? How is it possible that if there's, you know, a couple hundred million Americans, another, 30 million or so Canadians, 20, 24 million Australians. you add up all of the countries where this, where your line of thinking and questioning, and where I like to think my line of thinking and questioning is going. How can it be that across all of these countries, there's only enough people to fill a couple of forums about this stuff? How is that possible?
That baffles me. Almost means maybe there's hardly anyone on this plane that we're living on. Maybe all the numbers are grossly inflated. Maybe it's just up us because there's only a few of us left.
Do you believe the 6 billion people on Earth figure for a single moment?
No, I really don't. I really think in Europe, Western countries, the birth rate is just off the cliff, low. And I know you have a disdain for immigration, but I just don't think that the dirty jobs, any of the lower jobs are going to get done at all. And they bring in people, because especially Italy. Italy's birth rate has been so low for so long. Quebec, a province in Canada, their birth rate is really low. They went from the highest birth rate to the lowest as soon as they unhooked the shackles of the Catholic Church from that province. And I think most people just take the easiest course. Women too. Children are a lot of work. They're a lot of burden. They cost money, they're told. And I really think that the birth rate is way, way, way too low to sustain a population anywhere in a Western so-called first world nation. And Jungle Surfer, as much as sometimes you like to make fun of him and his transgender investigation, he was doing a video about just highlighting the city of Jakarta in Indonesia, trying to figure out where all the millions of people...
Hey, Abba, I don't mean to be rude, but you're cutting in and out. I can't hear a thing you're saying.
Very dodgy. Very dodgy.
Now, to the listeners, I apologize. It looks as though Ab's TeamSpeak account is logging itself in and out of the live stream in the TeamSpeak client. So Ab is probably completely oblivious right now to the fact that we can't hear him because his account is not even in the live stream. So I'll stick around for a little bit longer to see if Ab comes back.
I'm back.
Yeah, you were cutting in and out there, man.
Oh, okay. Get any of it before I disappear?
Yeah, I got your general idea. You're saying that you think that immigration is necessary, and I'd be more than happy to have a proper chat with you about that topic, but we don't really have enough time tonight for us to convince each other either way. I've got my views on leaving people be and.
Yeah, I only got about 25 minutes left before I have to head off to the beach. Enjoy these last 2 days of official summer here in North America. Maybe go march in a parade on Labor Day. Labor Day there.
I don't think so, but I don't really follow the public holidays that well. If you don't follow the mainstream media, it's funny how you, like, and if your job doesn't really have to worry about it too much, it's funny how you don't really even. I don't want to speak for others, but for me personally, I don't even really know if it's a public holiday or not. A few weeks ago, I went to go into work, and someone said to me, "Do you have to work today?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, it's I'm pretty sure today's Wednesday." And they're like, "Yeah, it's a public holiday." And I was like, "Oh, awesome."
It's Australia Day there?
We do have an Australia Day. It's early in the year. I think it's March. I can't even remember what it's meant to signify. I can't even remember our official story for Australia Day. Is Australia Day? It's not.
That's where you burn a kangaroo, isn't it?
I think we were federated on January 1, and they didn't want to make January 1 the public holiday for obvious reasons, so they had to pick a different day, but I don't even know. That's where I kind of feel lucky. I don't even really know most of the official stories that well. So my first exposure... Okay, I'll give you an example. Have you ever looked into the Colosseum?
Rome?
Hmm.
The one that keeps getting rebuilt?
Well, obviously people are talking about Stonehenge a lot. And today I went to grab myself a coffee from a place that is kind of supposed to be Italian nearby. I just went in there for the coffee, right? And while I'm waiting for the coffee, I just had a look around, and there was a big picture, sure enough, of the Colosseum. And I've never studied the Colosseum. I don't know the official story of the Colosseum. I know the general idea. There's this big place that was built for gladiators in Rome a long time ago. I get that. But the actual story, I've never looked into. So while I was waiting for this girl to make my coffee, once she finished, I said to her, "Hey, listen, can I ask you a quick question? I'm not going to judge your answer." And she's like, "Sure." And I said to her, "See that photo of the Colosseum there? How old do you think the Colosseum is?" Like, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to try and correct you. Just How well do you think that structure is? And then straight away, I could see her trying to go to her, I guess, the official story, like, which to her would be the only story, right? She's like, oh, was it a couple hundred BC and da 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 da. And then she kind of answered as though she thought that I knew the answer. And I said to her, look, I don't know the official story of the Colosseum, but what I do know is that with the Stonehenge, we've got photos of them restoring that thing, you know, a few decades ago, 100 years ago or something like that. So if they've restored it, how do I know they didn't just make it up, you know, to begin with? And by this stage, her friend had joined her, so the two of them were both, you know, behind the bar, and I could sort of see them trying to think through what I was suggesting here. And I'm like, yeah, like what I'm saying is, suppose Stonehenge, I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to fudge Stonehenge 100 years ago. So something like the Colosseum, how do we even know how old this thing is, you know? People do play tricks. You know, the first thing this girl said to me, she's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's real. She's like, I'm pretty sure it's real. You know, they used to flood it and have ship battles there. And I'm like, wait, you're telling me that you believe that they used to flood the Colosseum with water to have ship battles? And she's like, I'm just like,
oh, I never heard of that.
I'm just like, I've never heard it. That's exactly what I said. I'm like, I've never heard of that. She then went on to tell me that she has been there. I've got no reason to doubt her story. Her body language didn't suggest to me that she was lying. She apparently has actually done a tour, you know, or seen like a little museum or something that's there. And she's like, yeah, they explained to us. And I'm like, gee, how would you, and I try not to be confrontational. I'm like, how would you know? And she's like, oh, they showed us, she even said, they showed us some old bones. No word of a lie, that's what she said. I'm like, wow.
Wow. Pretty interesting. Are you sure she didn't think you were trying to pick her up?
Well, look, that I guess that's all. I was amazed how much time I just wanted a quick question about the age of the Colosseum, you know, and I didn't really want to get it. But next thing I knew, we'd been chatting for a couple of minutes. Anyway, the point of my story is I believe that she believes they actually had water battles in this structure 1,000 years ago or more. Truly believes that. Now, I don't even know if the official story says that there's water battles or if she's picked that up from some kind of movie or cartoon.
But maybe that was when Rome was Atlantis underwater. But no, I've never heard that. That seems the official story. The official story. That just seems like what you said, a cartoon. Well, it's all fascinating. Fascinating. You often talk to the girl behind the counter and engage in these kind of heady conversations?
Well, I do like to just chat with people behind the counter or whatever. But usually it's just small talk. I just think it's polite to say, hey, how's your day been? Da-da-da-da-da. Maybe if there's something really silly on the front page of the newspaper, I'll be like, gee, this is nonsense, whatever. But usually nothing too far beyond that. But on this occasion, it was too appropriate that there's this picture of the Colosseum, and I'm having this feeling of, oh yeah, of course, the Colosseum. You know what I mean? Like, of course, this is a lie as well. And I thought, you know what? I might as well just ask this young lady, what's the harm? And
how old was she?
I would guess maybe between 18 and 20. I mean, the suburb that I live in is university.
Nice.
It's a university area. That's why I moved here in the first place. So even though I'm not a student anymore, I still am surrounded by young people. And I mean, I'm still relatively young, but like an 18 or 19 year old to me
good
is a child now.
Ground for you.
That's another thing too. This whole, in the last 12 months, my views on a lot of things have changed, and what I used to think was a good use of my time now seems like a complete waste of my time, if I can put it in those terms.
Well, wait till you get in your 40s, it gets worse. But
you're a married man, aren't you?
Read somewhere where 40s is one of the worst decades for humans to go through. Whole article, but I saw the headline. Read it now. Now that I think about it,
I guess it makes sense if you in any way, shape, or form buy into the life that we're told we're supposed to live in your 40s. It's when you're realizing that you're not going to be any of the things you dreamed that you were going to be, and that adult life is a lot more mundane than you had ever imagined, and the most exciting times are behind you. And yeah, I guess that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, like, well, there's an old saying that says on the young.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, definitely.
Good one. I got that.
Yeah, I've got no doubt. I'll look back in 10 years and I'll regret pretty
much
all of my 20s.
You would go out with a friend. Oh, it'd be good if you went out with either a video camera yourself and interviewed people about these things, because I'd like to watch that. Or if you had someone videotape you doing the interview, that'd be cool. I love man on the street interviews that are real. For real. And you'd be really great at it. I don't know. I've never seen your look. You have a face for television, because I haven't looked at the actual YouTube that you've done. But it would be really interesting. Stars Are Souls, whatever the guy's name is, Mike, or he went out, and of course his audio was horrible. But I like the idea of just going out and talking to regular people and seeing what comes out of their mouth. If you're giving controversial.
Yeah, you just cut out there, but I got the point that you were making. You like these sort of on the street things. It's funny you say that, because yesterday I decided just to go out and walk around the city.
The man on the street.
Yeah, well, yesterday.
Cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah, well, last night was Saturday night. Obviously it's early morning, Monday morning now, but like last night, was Saturday night. I just decided to listen to a podcast and just walk around the city. So I just caught a ferry into the city, just walked around. Wasn't drinking. I was just walking around the city.
Smartphone has a good enough video camera. I cut out. Are you there?
That's the thing. I was thinking of doing that, and I was
thinking you've cut out. I've cut out.
Yeah, you've been cutting out. You've been cutting out a lot, man. And I was just saying that I was thinking of the Re-Revisionist. I even asked a couple of people without the camera on. I just thought let's try this. Abs disappeared, but it's actually funny. Abs should bring that up, because I thought to myself, would I be willing to record people? I would try to record them and ask them questions about this kind of stuff. So I did speak to a couple of people. Randomly, I was just like, hey, have you heard the theory that nukes are a hoax? I asked it just like the Re-Revisionist did.
I am back.
Can you hear better now?
Yeah, I went through a dead zone, so.
Yeah, I was just saying that I was in the city last night and I wasn't drinking. I was just by myself, just walking around, and sometimes I do that. I know it sounds weird, but it's not as weird as it sounds. But anyway, I was tempted to be like the Re-Revisionist, Ray West, and record people, but I couldn't really get my head around the logistics of it, and the last thing I want to do is piss people off or make them, like, you know, get angry at me for recording them, you know, because I wouldn't like it if someone just walked up. If I was them, I wouldn't want someone like me just walking up and recording them, right? So I thought what I would do is I'd try and build up to it just by asking people without a camera, just, hey, have you heard the theory that nukes are a hoax, just like the Re-Revisionist does? And I did it a couple of times.
I got an idea for you. I got an idea to do. And these are all things I would like to do, but wouldn't have the stones to do it, or whatever you call that in from. Go out on the street, pick up a sign that says, what would the simple phrase be? Something like, about 9/11 for YouTube. Make it clear that they're going to be on film. They're going to be talking to you about 9/11, say, or I don't know if you'd want to use flat earth. I guess you have to if you want to provoke. And that way you have people willingly come up and ask you a question about it for YouTube. So you have everything up front. Maybe you wouldn't get one person. I don't even know. That would be cool. I'd watch that.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. If you just made a sign, and if they walk up to you and they see the sign, they've made their decision.
Yeah, well, there's one YouTube channel I saw. I got an idea from the No Agenda show. To listen to, and they were featuring a YouTube channel called Black History TV. It was really funny. It's not an official, it's not the history channel for blacks. It was just the guy called himself Black History TV, and they're just promoting black issues. I don't call it African American, because I don't think most Americans ever came from Africa. But anyway, I call it black because it's black culture. I call it what it is and stop being stupid about words. Anyway, he had a woman on. It was I'm pretty sure it was genuine, a man on the woman on the street interview. And this woman was fantastic, fantastic audio. And by the way, her visual never matched her audio, but here nor there. But she was going on and on. I can't even remember what it was about specifically. But man, that it was radio gold picked off. This guy picked off the street. And he just stood there with a microphone. He actually asked people if they were willing to chat. And most people said no. But she said yes, and boy, she just went on and on and on. That's the kind of thing that'd be cool. You're good at that, of course. You got the gift of the gab. Something like that, that method. Go look up Black History TV and see if you can find the interview. Well, I think I put it on moreab.com, moreab.com. Sure, I put it there. because I usually make a note of things I like. Got that. Find it.
Yeah, sounds interesting. I'll have to check it out for some inspiration. I agree with you. I think that's a cool way to not just get ideas out there, but just to poll the people. What do the people really think? And I went to there's a group of people who get together once a week in Brisbane and discuss all kinds of topics. And every week the topic changes, and some week it's, you know, are Australia's taxes too high? You know, is there a meaning to life? You know, is carbon emissions a big problem? Whatever. And you just sort of sign up and you go along and discuss things. I hadn't been for a few months because I've just been so busy. I usually like to go, even though it's a very soul-crushing experience, sort of sitting with these people.
Yeah, I guess so. You'd be a pariah.
Well, it's not even that. I'm smart enough not to even bring up anything. Like, I'm not there to piss people off. I just try to keep my finger on the pulse, and this is a good way to do it, to force yourself to get out there, to listen to people. Like, not just have a quick chat while they're making your coffee, but actually sit there for 2 hours and sort of watch them and their back and forth and their cognitive dissonance. And, you know, sure enough, I'm sitting there, and I had someone tell me, because the topic of vaccines came up, and I had this young lady sort of say to me, well, you know, and this is what she was saying about herself. She's like, well, I'm not a virologist. I'm not an immunologist. How would I know? And her point of argument was, well, how would you know, John, if you're not a virologist or an immunologist? And I said to her, if I had with me someone right now who'd done a 3-year theology degree, they'd spent 3 years studying theology, and they had that ology at the end of their name, would that mean that they're more qualified to comment on whether or not there's a God than you? And her response to me was shortly thereafter to say, it must be really lonely being like you. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, she's like, if you reject science and you reject this and you reject that, then there aren't many people like you. It must be really lonely. And I was like, you know what? And this was in a room full of people. So the idea is it's meant to be a general conversation. You're not meant to make it too personal because then other people get left out of the conversation. But anyway, I was like, well, you know what? Since you bring that up, I'm glad you asked. Yeah, for a little while it was there. For a little while, people like me generally go through a period of feeling lonely. But then you know what happens? If we're lucky, we find other people online who believe what we believe. And all of a sudden, there's 50, 100 of us in a live chat at the same time. And for a few hours each week, we get to feel like, we're not the crazy ones, you guys are.
yeah, good on you, mate. That's good, yeah.
I was trying to, I wasn't trying to put her down or anything like that, but it's like, she asked
whole
a good
new
question.
World.
Do we feel lonely? I think a lot of people do, man. Once you say, you know what, I don't trust the science or the TV, it is lonely for a lot of people at first, and maybe for some people forever, you know?
Well, yeah. Got to find new communities. You got to find new groups. At work. It's in the big bad so-called normal world. There's no one to talk to. Well, that's why I call this hoax recovery. What it is?
Jesus, it's deprogramming. I mean, and that's I jumped onto audio chat tonight just to talk about these movies, this programming that I received as a child about nuclear bombs. That's what it is. It's a process of deprogramming, and that's the other thing too. Most people who are programmed are all more or less on the same level. Once you start deprogramming, you're generally going to be at different levels, even to those who are on the same path. So, like, I remember when I first started asking people about nuke fakery in the YouTube truth community, and sure enough, there were accusations made against me at the time, just because a lot of them, all they knew about was the shitting hoaxes. That's it. So nuke fakery? No. You know, no, that's a bridge too far for them. You know, and it's like, even though we're all, most of us anyway, are ostensibly on the same path, it doesn't even mean that we're necessarily going to get along.
Absolutely. Oh, it's amazing which ones get left behind at different points. Where will I be left behind? Don't know. So far, I've been keeping up.
Just before you need to take off, I know that you have to get going soon, but here's just a quick one for you. Look, I know that she's not here to defend herself. This is an attack on Mayhem, but did you hear her argument against the flat earth most recently when she was chatting with Roller?
Well, I heard it, but I don't remember what it was. I heard everything.
Said if you take...
Just about making people looking crazy?
No, she said, if you take a ball, I actually had to pause, and on my phone, it's difficult to go back in a podcast, but I did it. I was like, I'll go back 2 minutes too far just to make sure I can listen to this bit again. Did I hear that right the first time? And I could be wrong. I hope I misheard it, but I thought she said words to the effect of, we know it's not flat because if you take everyone on a ball and they're all looking at the sun, And then you try and curve that and turn it into a flat, you'll get all different people trying to look at the sun, but they're all looking in different directions. And I was thinking to myself, you can make the exact same argument saying if everyone's on a flat looking at the sun and then try and transpose that onto a ball, now they're all looking, like, it's a non sequitur. It's an obvious non sequitur. It's not an argument against the flat earth at all. And then she started saying that, you know, the people looking to the flat earth, I don't know if she actually did cuss, but she said, in the most derogatory way that KM ever could, because she's so cute and sweet. Just said that they're all silly, they're all stupid. And I'm thinking, but if I just understood her argument correctly, then she's, you know, wow. Like maybe the...
Yeah, I know. She hasn't said anything convincing to me to knock me off my investigation. And there's just really, to put a top five reasons why it's more flat than curved, and just try and analyze people's answers to that, because you can grab any simple argument you want and argue against it, but there's some real empirical evidence that's really hard to explain, including looking across Lake Ontario and seeing the entire CN Tower from 33 miles away. Where's the curve? I really need a good explanation for that.
I fully understand you, Ab. For me, I'm coming at this from a different angle. Like, I feel as though all the flat earth proofs, I feel like the moment you start putting up flat earth proofs, and this is just me speaking, I'm not criticizing you, I'm just thinking, this isn't even really strategic so much as it is philosophical. I'm thinking the moment you start saying that you have proofs of a flat or whatever, I'm thinking you're already giving them too much space to attack you. I still want them to prove to me gravity. They need it. Until they can prove to me gravity, then why would I ever entertain this ridiculous notion that I live in a ball? You need gravity. And their explanation for gravity is so ridiculous. I don't have to defend my beliefs about the world to anybody. If you want me to believe that I'm upside down compared to Ab right now, or that he's upside down compared to me, and that we're on a ball sticking to the bottom of it due to gravity, fine. Explain to me gravity, right? And Ab, before you go, let me throw this one to you. If the force of gravity is mass 1 times mass 2 over r squared, which is just the inverse square law, times by the constant of g. I've already explained before how the constant of g is ridiculous, but let's put that aside for a moment. Let's just pretend we've got the constant. Why is it that if the force of gravity is determined by mass 1 times mass 2, how come in a vacuum, heavier things don't still fall faster? Their own
formula... Can you prove gravity? Because it's just a theory. It's just an explanation for why certain things are observable. Can you prove a theory? I don't know. I think a theory is just the alleged best explanation for why things are as they think they are or as they see them. I don't know. I just looked up, is gravity a law or a theory? Because I got two different answers on the internet. A law or is it a theory? And what's the difference between a law and a theory?
Yeah, good questions. For me, I'm looking at this as the idea of a theory, right? It's a theory to explain the phenomenon. What I'm saying is their own theory doesn't explain their own observations, right? If you go to the YouTube right now and look up proof of gravity, feather, ball in a vacuum, you'll even find footage from the BBC of that young-looking guy, even though he's a bit old, I forget his name. Anyway, the hipster old... Anyway, the point is you'll find that guy doing an experiment in a big vacuum chamber where they suck out all the air from the vacuum chamber, they drop the bowling ball and the feather, and then supposedly the feather and the bowling ball hit the ground at the same time. And the ball earthers say, look, this is proof of gravity because once you take away the air resistance, they fall at the same speed. And then I say, yeah, okay then, but if your force of gravity is, if F equals E times M1 times M2 over R squared, then surely that force is going to be stronger with the bowling ball than with the feather. So we shouldn't actually be seeing the very footage that you're telling me we should be seeing. So I looked into the explanation for that, and then what they do is they say, oh, yes, force does equal G times M1 times M2 over R squared. It does equal that, but it also equals mass times acceleration. And since we know acceleration, then we can just put the two equations next to each other. You can eliminate mass 1 for both. We know the mass of the Earth. We know the radius. So what they do is they cheat. They blatantly cheat to get around the obvious problem of their own force of gravity. They simply use a different formula that already presupposes the very thing they're trying to prove. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Like, the whole thing is so utterly ridiculous to me now. I'm saying, you know what? I don't have to give you any proofs of a flat. I don't have to give anybody any proofs of anything. I'm supposed to believe I'm on a ball. Explain to me gravity. And nobody can at all.
Well, yeah, because gravity, the theory of gravity has a lot of contradictions. It's almost like a catch-all where there's a lot of unexplained phenomena where the theory doesn't work. It just catches them all and you hide it under equations that coincide and often contradict. It seems just to be a giant sideshow, confused. That's sort of what you're saying or getting at. But yeah, it's full of contradictions and it's not perfect. Doesn't perfectly explain. And the quote you used from Newton said, if you believe this, you're crazy, which was pointed out to you. I don't know if it's true that it was taken out of context. Maybe Newton was just saying, this is a crazy idea. But here it is anyway, and this is what I could come up with to try and tie all the unexplainables together under this umbrella theory we call gravity. And yeah, it's full of contradictions, but it's the only one I could come up with that explains the most things. I think a theory, that's what a theory is. It's whatever explains most things successfully.
Well, the idea of a scientific theory is meant to be that once it's falsified, it's rejected. So like a theory doesn't just have to fit as much as possible. It's meant to fit all observed phenomena, all empirical observations, and if even one empirical observation can disprove the theory, then the theory is no good.
Well, it could still be the best theory. If the best theory to explain all the phenomena, but it's certainly open to being knocked off. And maybe 500 years later, no one has bothered to knock it off because of the power of persuasion, logical fallacies, all the things they've used for the last 500 years that they perfected people into all kinds of things. Quite possible that the art of rhetoric and convincing and propaganda have been perfected over the last 500 years. So a lot of these weak theories are still standing because they don't need much substance because the power of persuasion has been able to hold them up. That has been perfected over the last 400, 500 years. The power to dominate an argument and control the media, subsidize the people that are researching it so they won't go off the tracks. That's what's really been perfected.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think what they've also done is they've managed to convince the average person that unless you've spent several years specializing in a certain field, that you have no right to look into it for yourself. And I'm saying right now, I think anyone who did even basic mathematics in high school, if they spend a few hours just looking through the theories, some of these so-called physics theories and some of their equations, once you've spent a bit of time, it's actually not that complicated. You can work through it yourself. And when you do, you realize that there's fundamental errors with some of these theories at the very first hurdle. And I'm saying that force equals M1, M2 over R2 times the G constant. You don't have to be that smart, and you definitely don't need 3 years of training to be able to look at that. Look at the observations from what happens around you and realize that this is complete crap.
Yeah. Well, was this the thing you were teasing us with on the last call that you were looking into?
No. I've got another couple of lines of inquiry on the go, and they're going to make all of this.
Okay.
Yeah. But I want to get further with those before I say too much, that's all. Like with the ball stuff I'm happy. You could sit me here. It's 1:20 in the morning. You could sit me right down next to a physicist and even the best rhetorical orator, and so long as you give us both equal time, I could destroy the ball in front of them. That's how confident I am right now about that. But the other lines of inquiry I've got, I'm still trying to get my head around a couple of things before I say anything publicly.
Wow. So a big revelation is coming from Jean Le Bon.
Yeah. And it won't be anything too drastic for most fakeologists, but...
Okay.
But, yeah, for maybe for... I don't know, man. I don't know, Tim. I don't know if you realize this, mate, but you and me and a lot of people who might listen to this, we really are on the fringe of the so-called truth community. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So what might not seem so crazy to you and the rest of the fakeologists, I'm sure to a lot of the people who found my work through YouTube, this will be very out there.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So I'll be able to handle it, is what you're saying, when you do release this breaking information.
Yeah, I think you'll be able to handle it. And maybe you'll even be able to disprove me, because this is one of those ones where I'm quite happy to be wrong about what I think I've discovered.
I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully you'll reveal it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully. I'll tell you what, that Clues Forum, what a compendium of knowledge, really. Yep. I don't understand why more of them don't have their own YouTube channels.
I don't either. And a ton of things in this world, but everyone has their specialty and place where they're comfortable with, so happy with it. Anyway, John, I'm going to get ready for the beach. As I said, it's the last weekend. It's over 30 here, unusual. Get many over 30 weekends, and I know that probably is a low number for you Aussies, you Gold Coasters. Good stuff for us here.
Yeah, well, you go and show off that beach body of yours, Ed.
Yeah.
You enjoy the sun.
All right, and it's great chatting with you, and then hang out anytime here. You've got
the
operator status.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Here, Jono.
Hey, man. So that was Aberrado, Tim, Fakeologist, the guy who put this website together. And what a resource it is. It really is terrific. You just jump on here, and I hope I haven't bored too many people with my my trip down memory lane and all the nonsense that I was watching at, 30 frames per second. When I was a child, didn't know any better, just being programmed like a little robot, really. They were programming like a robot to be afraid that I could disappear at any moment. But yet here I am, all these years later. I haven't disappeared yet. If I do, it won't be because of a nuclear bomb. How ridiculous is that? I fell for it. I fell for the nuclear bomb thing, but how was I supposed to know any better? So, so just recapping tonight, I had a quick chat with Ab. Sorry if he was cutting out a little bit. I don't think he noticed. I probably should have told him a bit more, but hopefully the audio was all right. But, I've probably been here for about an hour or two, so probably time to get going. But, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, True Lies, 1991 and 1994, respectively, both James Cameron, and then Failsafe 2000. Three films that I can think of programmed me in ways that I'm only just starting to get my head around. Wonder if you guys, the listeners, can think of any examples from your childhood that, looking back, you now realize were affecting the way that you saw your own existence, your own potential end of existence from one push of a button. Crazy stuff. Yeah, I'm sure there are other films. That's the thing. I'm sure I'll wake up tomorrow and I'll be like, oh, yeah, there's another one. The film that I saw. Oh, yeah, I watched so many films. Oh, yeah, and that other thing I wanted to talk about, the Colosseum. Yeah, if any of you guys have been looking at the Colosseum, please come and do an audio chat and tell me what you know, or leave a comment underneath this chat on Fakeologist. Yeah, I haven't looked into the Colosseum yet, but I've got pretty young ladies telling me they believe that there used to be water pumped in there. It used to be flooded. That was where she used to flood it. They used to flood it with boat battles, which just sounds utterly ridiculous to me. But hey, what would I know? She's been there. I haven't. Who knows what technology they had thousands of years ago, eh? Anyway, that's enough from John LeBron. It's now, is it the 7th of September? Yeah, I need to get to bed. So on Monday morning, the 7th of September, probably still 6. You're listening live in North America or Europe, or even most of the rest of Asia for that matter. Not that I think Ab would have too many listeners from Asia, but if you are listening from Asia, how you doing? Maybe Hallahan's listening. How are you, Hallahan? How's South Korea? Haven't heard from you for a while. It's time for me to sign off. While I'm talking, I'm just going through this Wikipedia page of the Colosseum. Is there something? Oh, yeah. What a nonsense. All right, guys, that's it from me. So have a good week. I might pop in again during the week, maybe. See how we go. I'll be listening. I listen to all your audio chats now, so if you're somewhere on the audio chat, just know that there's plenty of other people out there like me who'll be listening. Listen, because every now and then people pop in with something really interesting to say. And that was like I said, the main thing I spoke about tonight was Blue Moon's podcast talking about Blue Cokes and the effect it had on us. So if you haven't already listened to that podcast by Blue Moon, like I said, it's only 40 minutes, well worth your time. Anyway, I'm out of here. So see you later.
Hey, everybody. This is O'Hallahan from South Korea. And you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.